Putting butter on bread does not make it toast.
What?
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Untapped Podcast. I'm your host, Paul. Like ultimating Nico Bolas, this is Take 7, Discard 7, Sacrifice Home Permanence. With me tonight is Goodspeed.
I'm going to go last.
Also with us tonight, Kaz.
Like playing Wheel of Fortune with Underworld Dreams on the field, this is Take 7.
Ooh. I like that one.
Do people actually know Underworld Dreams?
Are you kidding?
I assume this is just a Fate Unraveler callback. And last, we have Ed.
Like having a Birds of Paradise and an Avacyn's Pilgrim on the field, and casting Surak with a Rancor, and attacking for 7.
Why
this
is Birds of Paradise?
Take 7.
Why was there Birds of Paradise on the battlefield, Ed?
Because you had to have mana to do this.
All right.
On turn 3.
All right. Sure.
I did this. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
This
seems humorous.
Part of the cube deck. Okay.
Speaking of things Ed did.
No, you have to do your thing.
I know. I am going to do my thing.
Do
this
it.
This is. I don't know if this is.
Oh no, he's doing his thing everywhere.
I don't know if this is taking 7, but it's like casting Wheel of Fortune when your opponent has 6 cards left in their library.
That's draw 7.
And then you win.
Take then 7 cards
no.
from your library.
But you're only taking 6. And I also use Wheel of Fortune.
Well, that's exactly why it's funny, because it's take 7 and you can't get there, so you lose.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is basically how this opening has gone.
It's not funny.
I think it's funny because I did it to Goodspeed during Cube.
That's why I bring it up.
So let's talk about Cube. Ed, you were playing Wheel of Fortune. What else did you play?
So I think it's easier if we start with my opinion of what I thought drafting was going to be to explain how I ended up in what I ended up in.
Probably sure. Talk about how the draft went.
So everyone who plays with me knows that I really dislike one of the colors, and that color is green. I don't value it. I think it's terrible. It has no reactive capability, and it's just... to me, not fun to play. Except, on opening the first pack, I grabbed Bayou. In the second pack, I think I got Taiga.
So why was Bayou a notable card?
Oh, it was the first time we've had the dual lands in Cube.
That's right.
Then I also noticed, by the third pack, when I got my third dual land, because I was just taking dual lands, all of which happened to be forests, by the way, at this point, and that was just lucky. I also only noticed that the other dual lands that I saw at this point were the filter lands. So I had thought that, unknown to everyone, Paul had taken out all of the fetch lands instead for dual lands. And so I tried to just take as many of them as I could because I was so scared of having terrible mana.
I thought Paul was going to take out the shocks, but...
Neither of those things were true.
Neither of them were true. He just added the dual lands. So my deck ended up having a significant number of these. But also in that pack, I notably, after I picked a Bayou, in that pack also were Rafelos and Hornet Queen, both of which wheeled to me. So I took Rafelos on the second wheel, and then I took Hornet Queen on the last wheel.
I think you were the only player playing green.
So I ended up in green, and I think I was the only player, which made the rest of the draft go very interestingly.
I splashed green, but then some.
You splashed one green card.
Yeah, but I wanted to splash. Like, there's a Loxodon and Smiter someone took.
That was me, because I was speculating. Yeah. Well, so I ended up playing green 5 color, because I had such good fixing. But all of my fixing was also forests, so it made Rafelos good, and also made everything very findable in my deck. So I ended up playing this, like, 5-color green deck, which actually was just mono-green with, like, a few 5-color spells, which I like to call inevitability spells. Because as we found out against Goodspeed, if you're playing against the deck that only draws its cards, Wheel of Fortune will win you the game, even if they stall the game an incredibly long time.
Well, that game was kind of a fluke in the first place, but we'll get to that.
It was what I had tried to do, though, when I planned the deck. I had both Wheel of Fortune and Magus of the Wheel in the deck, and I had a Kozilek. So my intent was to, at some point in the game, if I got stalled, attempt to use those 3 cards continually, with an Eternal Witness, I'll add you, to mill my opponent. Which I did once successfully against Goodspeed.
So, are you prepared to talk about this game?
Am I?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, my deck was mono blue draw spells, with all of, I think, four win conditions, three of which were planeswalkers. So Ed and I played, round one, and I won a game because I played Karn on turn seven into, an almost empty board and immediately exiled Kozilek from his hand, which I knew he had.
Which was bad. The reason I conceded was because I could see him minusing Kozilek before, or minusing Karn before I could do anything.
Ultimate
and
Karn.
Just starting
with
a game with Kozilek on the field. And I was like, I'm not going to wait that long. It's like, I'm not going to wait that long to lose. I'll just concede this game.
So
Karn has yet to restart a game, though.
No, he doesn't. I did it.
Oh, that's right.
It's happened a few times.
I got really close. I'm like, I should restart.
I think I did it twice that night, too, and people were really pissed because I made the rounds go long.
Yeah, you people usually concede to that, which is fine.
I was restarting with very small advantages. It was like five lands.
Small advantages.
That was half the joke.
But we eventually get to game three. He plays creatures, they attack me, I block and kill some of them. I eventually end up at four life.
And I was at five. We were...
No, it took a little while. Were you?
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened.
We were incredible. You were also you were attacking back.
Okay.
I don't remember what.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I was also low.
I would guess flying two twos.
And I thought I was gonna die. Yeah, you had that was the game that you had Riftring Cloudskate on the field and...
Yes. And probably a Moldrifter. But anyway, so basically, I'm at four life. He has two-power creatures attacking. He tries to kill my Jace, so I put my Jace in response.
Yeah. Which I knew you were going to do.
Right. But if you didn't, I was just going to block, and
right.
then still be
which
alive.
Which is why I did it in pre-combat.
Right. I have a Ashiok in play at seven, and I have just exiled a Hornet Queen the turn before. He goes for the kill. I have Vapor Snag to kill one of the tokens is a 2-2, so I kill the token. I take two. I ultimate Ashiok, getting the Hornet Queen in play. I've been holding off a Spirit Monger with an Icy Manipulator for, like, four turns.
Oh, yeah. That was also... Yeah.
I feel like I'm confusing it with the game we played before it.
No, okay, so this is correct. And then after that, you ended up passing the turn after solidifying your board state.
Yes.
I was going to lose if I hadn't drawn exactly one of two cards in my deck, which was going to be Magus of the Wheel or Wheel of Fortune, because before Goodspeed ended his turn, I asked him, how many cards are in your library? And it was six. So I went to draw a step going, if it's a Wheel of Fortune or a Magus of the Wheel, because I had Serac and the ability to give it haste. I was like, I'm going to either lose or win, because I couldn't attack the Serac in, so I knew that the haste was only going to get to activate the Magus of the Wheel. And I top-decked Wheel of Fortune, and it was just, like, the best thing ever.
Just, like, the game was so dumb, because so many things had to go right for me to even be in the game, and then I just lost to Wheel of Fortune. It was great.
Point proving, though, also, my favorite card in the cube, which is Ashiok, definitely had the ability to hold me off.
Ashiok was pretty good.
I love the image of Serac just, like, helping the Magus spin the wheel really fast.
Yeah, do it. Do it now.
Ed forgot in game one that Magus had to tap to sacrifice.
I did. No, I tried to attack and then sacrifice the Magus of the Wheel, and I just completely didn't know that it had a tap symbol on it. Like, I just looked over it, because I think I had Rancor on it.
Maybe.
So I was, like,
there was certainly a Rancor in play.
Yeah, I remember trying to do it, and Goodspeed was like, read your card. And I was like, what the fuck? It's like a tap symbol. You can't not read that. Anyways, let's talk a little bit about my deck. So if we look at it, what did I end up playing with? So the deck was, you know, standard green, you know, little stuff. So, like, obviously, Birds of Paradise and Avacyn's Pogrom. Best card in the deck was hands down Lotus Cobra, because the amount of mana it made me in all of my games between having the Oracle of Moldiah, using fetch lands, and just it being solid for the ability of casting the other five colors that I wasn't having, made that card so freaking good. Also, Rancor plus Lotus Cobra, when the board is empty, or even if it's not empty, usually gets something killed and or deals some damage, so it was pretty good. Serac was pretty good. I was not impressed with Master of the Wild Hunt. It didn't ever do almost anything. In a game against Caleb, I cast Kozilek three times, drawing 12 cards. Which was really fun, like hard cast.
Now, how did you get it back to your hand?
Well, I didn't technically get it back to my hand. Caleb Ventured it the first time, and then
on the stack,
and then the next two times it was Jace the Mind Sculptored back to my hand.
Well, okay. Yeah, he also used Jace to bounce a Solemn Simulacrum once. So let's.
Well, no. The fourth time, here was the issue. I was holding, and he knew, because he had seen my hand, that I had a Serac in my hand. And if he hadn't done it continually, he was going to die, because the following turn, I was going to have enough mana to play both Serac and Kozilek.
Yeah, I suppose he's going to draw lands when you're drawing five cards a turn.
So, it was funny. I don't know. It was an interesting situation. I don't know if he was making the best decisions up to there, but he certainly was making the right decision in not letting Kozilek hit the field. Or at least stay on the field enough to get two at a point where it attacks, because, I mean, Annihilator would have just ruined him. Yeah, so that was basically, I mean, that's that line of the deck, is Mana Ramp, have a few big fatties, Serac to give all of my little, I had quite a few 2/2s, or things at least with 2 power, like Kasali Pride Mage. What else is in there?
Eternal Witness, Trigon Predator, Shaman.
And Eternal Witness was in there with like the intent of getting back Swords to Plowshares and or Wheel of Fortune or Magus the Wheel, which it did a few times, was great. Primetime was, the best thing Primetime did was turn one, Strip Mine against Kaz. Turn three, Eternal Witness back Strip Mine to Strip Mine another land, and then somehow, Kozilek got discarded from my hand and put Strip Mine back in my deck into a Primeval Titan Strip Mine. Which left Kaz at literally... Oh, and I cast an Acidic Slime that game. Which left Kaz on, like, turn 7 on 1 mana.
With a swap.
And me at, like, 7. And Mana Dorks. So it was a really interesting... That was a funny game for me.
I mean, Primetime looks great. And with Strip Mine and Raging Ravine in your deck, it's never going to be a bad play.
Right. Of the cards that were in my deck, the best card, like I said, was Lotus Cobra. So I've never played green before in Cube, and I didn't know how to assess the cards. The worst card, which I thought was going to be the best, because it was a sorcery, it looks big, it has Entwine, it looked like a thing I wanted to ramp into, was just terrible. And it was Tooth and Nail, which happens to be one of Kaz's favorite cards.
I mean, I like Tooth and Nail, yeah.
And I just thought, after hearing him talk it up, like, every cube.
Did I?
Yes.
Oh.
I've talked about wanting it cut multiple times before.
Oh, okay.
And I had never heard anyone except you argue for it to stay in, and I just trusted you. But after playing with it...
The trust is gone.
In 3 games, it sat in my hand, and it was just not good. Because by the time I could cast it, I either had enough creatures on the field to just keep attacking, and not want to use the mana that they were making. Or I had drawn one of my multiple threats, and it was just better to play other small things. It was never, like, a card that was ever going to win me a game. It was just win more and way too much mana. So if I drew it earlier in the game, it was just terrible.
Well, to be fair, you also have Magus of the Wheel and Wheel of Fortune, and therefore you don't actually need Tooth and Nail that much.
Right, I mean, I was getting to my cards other ways, but it just felt... Like, I thought I was going to need it to get Kozilek. I thought I was going to need it to get Hornet Queen, because I only had 3 threats in my deck. It was Primeval Titan, Hornet Queen, Kozilek.
Discounting Serac and Spiritmonger.
They're not threats. I mean...
Spiritmonger definitely is.
Serac deals damage. Spiritmonger seemed to get tapped down a lot. Rophelos ended up just being actually... The card Rophelos does not actually say tap and add green mana to your mana pool equal to the forest. What Rophelos actually says is your opponent discards a removal card from their hand. That is actually... It's 2 green and it says your opponent discards a card from their hand. Like, it never tapped in my games. I never tapped Rophelos. It was really annoying.
I mean, that's why... And it's proven how good he is, right?
I don't know. I mean, if all it does is says your opponent discards a removal card, like, I would rather just be playing a Noble Hierarch. At least I'm getting an Exalted Trigger.
I think a Noble Hierarch would eat it, too, a lot of the times, but Rophelos is certainly more obnoxious than a Noble Hierarch.
I mean, in both cases, the adage applies, always bolt the bird.
That would not have been correct against me. If we're talking about, like, bolting the Birds of Paradise.
It might. I mean, keeping you on 5 mana made a difference in our match.
No, because I'm confused. What? In our match, the person who got constrained by color was you because I destroyed your Izzet Signet. You were trying to do the same thing to me, and it didn't work.
I in game 2, I constrained you on total amount of mana available.
On total mana.
Which is still something Birds of Paradise counts toward.
Yeah, but it wasn't colors, and I thought that's why you said target the birds. The only difference between birds and Rophelos is either amount of mana or color. colors.
Well, both the birds saying that goes all the way back to the beginning of Magic.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize the reference. It just seemed like you were saying that evaluating something as having more mana producing for you versus color was the point.
It's just you don't want to, like... A blue tempo deck is that they're playing spells that undo what you're trying to do. A green tempo deck is a deck that displays bigger spells at the time than you can play. And bolting the bird prevents them from getting ahead in this case.
Okay.
So
I would bolt the elf, but that's me.
It's the same notion.
I will say something here about your deck, Ed. So I do think, I do like Tooth and Nail. I think in your deck, so like, I mean, like I said, the Magus of the Wheel and Wheel of Fortune, whatever, you know, when you empty your hand, you get more cards. Tooth and Nail really works best, and it's like, oh, I played all my ramp spells because I need that to get to mana, and then all of a sudden I don't have any threats because I need all these ramp spells to get ahead. And so Tooth and Nail is like, all right, the two biggest things for my deck, which can usually be, it usually just wins the game, although it depends if your opponent has a Wrath or something. But
I just generally, I think the issue with it is that I just generally don't like tutors because they don't seem to be effective as just drawing enough. In Cube, to me, tutors just don't seem to be effective as just having another good spell in your deck.
I mean, Tooth and Nail's a little more than a tutor, though.
Kind of? If someone... it's the reason I'm saying kind of is because if someone is playing a good... like, I mean, in Cube, if you pass the turn and you just put two creatures down, it is as likely for your opponent to wrath the board as it is for them to be able to just randomly kill two of your creatures. So it really just functions... to me, it sounds... to me, it functions like a tutor.
Well, it is meaningful, like, how early you manage to Tooth and Nail, but also, I mean, I don't think Wraths are prevalent enough.
I think what matters more for Tooth and Nail is the type of things that you're Tooth and Nailing for. If you're looking at cards like Simic Sky Swallower or Sphinx of the Steelwind, these are things that are really hard to kill once they're in play, and they almost always win you the game. Gristlebrand would be another exciting target to Tooth and Nail for, because it's like, you get to draw seven, and you have two big threats in play, you know, that sort of thing. Hornet Queen is generally a reasonable Tooth and Nail target. Kozul, like, less so, because you don't get the advantage of drawing the cards, his cast trigger, and he doesn't have any staying power.
That wasn't my issue ever with Tooth and Nail. My issue with Tooth and Nail was that I would just draw one of the other... maybe I was just lucky. But the times I had Tooth and Nail in my hand, I just flat-out drew Hornet Queen. Or I just flat-out also drew Kozilek. And then I had three big spells sitting in my hand.
I mean, you also do have a bit of a mid-range in your deck, which I don't think Tooth and Nail decks usually do.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I mean, and that's what it felt like. I mean, that's why it ended up in my sideboard. It just didn't feel
like
it. Yeah,
I don't think it was... I would have sideboarded it too, if I don't think it's right for this.
I just went into this, I mean, novice at green, went into this thinking, this is like one of Kaz's like top favorite green cards, it should be in my deck. And it just was not working for me.
But when Kaz cast it, he usually gets Vorniclex, Voice of Hunger, and...
Oh, now we're talking about Commander.
And something else. What's the other thing you like to get with it?
I don't know. It was... it was something which basically, like, destroyed everything. I don't remember.
Bane of Progress. All right.
It was, like, sort of a Wrath. I don't remember what it was, though. It was some sort of green Wrath. So I don't know if those exist. I don't know what I'm thinking of. Oh, wait, it was probably just Raffellos most of the time. Just because, like, fuck it. I'm going to make Omnath into an 80-80 this turn.
Oh, yeah. I guess that's true once you have the,
Not like it was usually necessary, but...
That guy. Vorniclex, yeah. Vorniclex Raffellos. Totally fair.
So, yeah, that was the green deck that I played for the first time in green that took me 3-1.
Let's go back to Goodspeed's deck for a little bit. I know we started there. So your deck was... That's game. So your deck was all draw spells, as I recall. Just for the folks at home, I'm going to go over the spells that effectively drew you cards. We have Ancestral Vision, Preordain, Ponder, Gataxian Probe, Jace Vryn's Prodigy, Muldrifter, Compulsive Research, and Treasure Cruise. And if you want to be cute, Sheldock Isle.
If you want to be cuter, Ashiok.
So, Goodspeed.
So, I'm just going to point out, I can't really name another card in my deck besides the ones you just listed.
How about the Dulcan Shackles?
I remember that. I never used them.
I will say that in the games that he played it against me, I broke them immediately.
Yep. Maelstrom Pulse kept killing it. Also, it's like, so I first picked Jace Vryn's Prodigy over Grizzlebrand and a dual land.
What pack?
Pack one, pick one. I was like, okay, maybe the Grizzlebrand will come back. Of course it didn't.
Yeah, I would never expect Grizzlebrand to wheel. I would maybe have expected Jace to wheel.
Grizzlebrand doesn't really wheel early on because it's a very good speculative pick.
Right. But
it's much more likely to wheel in pack two if there's no strategy for it.
I thought of that after, but my draft went pack one, pick one, Jace. Then I picked Show and Tell speculatively on Grizzlebrand and the Frost Titan in that pack coming around. Neither of them did. I ended up not playing Show and Tell.
And yet you stayed in blue.
I did, because I kept getting blue cards.
This is probably the bluest deck at the night.
Yeah, it's missing. So as someone who plays blue often in this cube and has done well with mono blue specifically, it just is missing the pieces that I would look for. It has a lot of them, but it is too much of a few things.
Yes.
Meaning too many draw spells. Jace Vryn's Prodigy doesn't belong in this deck because all of your spells are instants that you want to cast and or the sorceries that you do literally just draw you. Like, it's not doing... The profit off using counterspell with Jace is not... That doesn't exist.
Oh, yeah, well, I know. But there's value off ultimate price. There's value... There's kind of value off soul manipulation.
Right, but in the cube, Jace is at his strongest in a reanimator deck.
Sure, which I was sort of trying to build in the beginning. My point is, blue did seem open. There were only two blue drafters.
Okay.
It just sort of happened that the person to my right was also drafting blue, because he first picked Jace the Mind Sculptor.
You and Caleb were both in Esper.
What black cards was he playing?
I could find out, but...
I was in Esper out of necessity to have enough playable, not because I wanted to be.
You had the fixing to support it, kind of.
Kind of. It was only a problem once, and then it ended up not being a problem anyway.
With all the draw spells you had, plus Tundra, Underground Sea, Marsh Flats, fetches either, it seems good.
It was okay.
Looks like
Silmar. That's what being Silmar.
On that first pick that you made, I don't want to sound preachy, but to our listeners who maybe probably don't play Cube as much as we do, or don't have as much experience, something that I do when I'm looking at, for instance, in that situation, when you're looking at Jace Vryn's Prodigy versus Grizzlebrand, and you speculatively took Jace because you thought that maybe you could fit the Grizzlebrand in.
No, I just think Jace is a more playable card.
Okay. What I would have looked at is the upside of having the cards. Grizzlebrand is a one-of-a-kind card in Cube. There is no other card like Grizzlebrand in the Cube. What Jace does, which is looting primarily, is an effect that you want in Reanimator or in other decks because it's just good, but primarily it is most broken in the Reanimator format. So
sure, but Grizzlebrand is only good in the Reanimator format.
Not true. Grizzlebrand is good when you can cast him.
When
you can sneak it into play.
Right.
So many
Grizzlebrand
times.
Is good anytime you can get him in play.
Getting him into play is really hard to do, though.
It is.
Especially in a less than 6-person draft.
Which is why in Pack 1, Pick 1, I would have picked Grizzlebrand just to see if I could do it, because you have the entire draft to try and put him in play. And you took a Show and Tell later.
Well, it was literally the next pick, but yeah.
I took Grizzlebrand pick 2. I didn't play him. Instead, I ended up playing Nicol Bolas Planeswalker, who fit the very similar role. It's like, oh, I have this card, maybe I can play it. Let's see how that turns out. It turned out well.
Like I was saying, though, that wasn't supposed to be, preachy to you. That was just, for listeners who haven't played Cube, that's kind of how you would evaluate picks.
I think there is higher upside to picking Grizzlebrand. I just wanted to draft blue, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, we both had the experience of drafting bad red-white decks last week.
I mean, like I said, I usually play blue, but by the third pick in the pack, it was obvious to me that blue was not open.
I knew what colors the two people to my left are in. Don't worry about that.
Kaz and Caleb?
No, Paul and Ed.
That was me and you.
It was... I knew Paul was in red and Ed was in green based on the cards I was passing. But I was it'll turn out fine.
I was the only one significantly in red. You're the only one significantly in green. And then you all were fighting over black-white.
We're going to talk about what I thought you were in when we talk about
Apparently, I got most of the black.
Because it was the most interesting thing ever.
So we want to have this intervention, because, leading to that is my deck.
Are you done talking about your deck?
I guess. We can talk about the funny things Paul noticed happened with it that he's written down.
All right,
but
so
I don't care.
I ended up playing Grixis something. Grixis, Ramp, Artifacts, Planeswalkers, Control. I think that's a fair assessment of what it was.
which is why it was so hard as another drafter at the table to figure out what the hell he was in. And when you're playing against him, and game one you see artifact, 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 Tezzeret, animate all of my artifacts, and lose, obviously, because of what was going on, and then game two see land, land, Grim Monolith, followed up by two Signets, then, like, Nicol Bolas by turn four, you lose.
Yeah, my opening hand against Ed in game two was three lands, two Signets, Grim Monolith, and Nicol Bolas, and I'm like, well, this hand makes nine mana, or maybe eight mana, and I have this Nicol Bolas I could cast. This could go wrong in many ways, but I can't in good conscience mulligan.
Point being, I was very confused by what he was in, because I was passing red to him, and I knew red was being taken by someone, and it was obvious to me by the picks that were in the pack that it was Paul, because I know what red picks he likes to take, and it seemed like it at the table based on the colors that were being taken and the order they were taken.
I was being passed red in both directions, but nobody wanted to play aggro, so all the red aggro cards were going around.
At the end of pack one, though, and this was the pick that I was very confused by until I played against you, and why I got so frustrated, it was down to two cards I was passing to Paul, and I went, this is a Talarian Academy? And the other card was something stupid that ended up just in my sideboard, and I don't remember what it was, but I went, you know what? If Paul's in the artifact deck, I just want to give him a Talarian Academy to see what he can do, and I fucking lost to it, is all I can say. But I was so positive he was in red, so I was so frustrated when game one against him, he goes like, Signet, Signet, Talarian Academy, and I was just like, God damn it!
Oh, man. So my deck played nine artifacts. I had Tezzeret, Agent of Bolas, and Duretti, Scrap Savant to take those to the next level. And the artifacts were helping me cast Nicol Bolas.
Looking at his deck list, Paul is playing mono Planeswalker control artifacts.
It's kind of true. I mean, it is true, I guess. It's just...
It's a pile.
Let's go.
It is a pile.
It is a pile that was able to always cast its spells, and it just ended up casting more powerful spells, or casting them earlier than people could deal with them. Or maybe I got lucky, and I think there's some element to all of these truths. I did play Umeza with Jite with five creature spells in my deck. If you count Nicol Bolas and Tezzeret and Koth, I have eight creature spells in my deck.
You don't count Nicol Bolas for that.
You don't count Koth either.
You take Nicol... No, I would count Nicol Bolas because Nicol Bolas hits the field and takes an opponent's creature.
Sure.
But when Nicol Bolas hits the field, you lose most of the time.
Well, I played against it for like seven turns before I lost, but you do lose.
You don't get to count Precursor Golems 3.
I didn't. I certainly didn't. Tezzeret arguably does count as a creature. I never used Tezzeret's Pulse ability and missed an artifact, and that was a little bit lucky. I'm not that flush with artifacts, but that was outside the realm of possibility. My creatures were all perfect for this deck, though. Solemn Simulacrum fixed my mana and ramped me, and people hate to kill it, so it just stayed in play. I think Umezawa's Jite got 40 counters, that's an exaggeration, like 20 counters with Solemn Simulacrum, because people refused to kill it, because you draw a card.
Who was refusing to kill it?
I don't know if refuses the right word, maybe they couldn't kill it? It's just a 2-2.
When you had that GJ against me, I tried to kill that fucking creature every time. So
I kill Solemn Simulacrum as soon as it hits the field, because I think that it gets better as the game goes.
You did kill it, but in a really strange way. I attacked with it, you did not block, then I cast Innocent Blood, second main phase, and you responded with the Dromoka's Command to trade.
Yeah.
So Innocent Blood did nothing, but Dromoka's Command did exactly what Innocent Blood would have done.
No. Wasn't there another creature?
You had a Birds of Paradise, and there were no other creatures in play at this time.
I think my thought process there at this point was... And I'm gonna try and reason it out. It was
a Birds of Paradise with a Rancor on it.
Yes. I don't actually know what my thought process was there, honestly. I think it had to do with the fact that as soon as the birds was off the table, I didn't have white at that point. So I wasn't casting Dromoka's Command. And two, I knew you were never going to play an enchantment. And three, I had no creatures in my hand, which was terrible for me because of the creature deck. So I thought, why not just do this? But I thought that Innocent Blood was target player sacrifices, honestly, which is why I think I did this.
That makes sense. I didn't bother to correct you at the time.
I honestly thought it said target player. I think that's why I did it.
I was going to end up sacrificing my Solemn anyway.
Well, here's to knowing what Innocent Blood does. I was going to lose those games regardless, though, based off of what was going on.
Yeah, I had reasonably good draws. Jite worked for me. It did stay in play. There were two games where it stayed in play for four or five turns when I had no creatures, because my deck didn't have that many creatures. And there were probably three games where I equipped it to a Bogarden Hellkite, which doesn't seem necessary, honestly.
It never got counters against me.
It was instrumental against Kaz's deck.
It still makes me so mad.
And Caleb exiled it before I played any creatures, and then I didn't play any creatures for most of the rest of that game. He had a detention sphere. This deck was fun. Shrine of Burning Rage was great, because I never had to use it to kill anything quickly. I could just let it tick up, and it was... You know, I'm not sure I ever activated its sacrifice ability. There was a game I played against Caleb, where it was over 12 counters on it, and I never attacked him. But my plan was just to kill him with a Shrine of Burning Rage, and he ended up conceding when he was still at 20 life, so that plan was going well.
It doesn't surprise me. He seemed like he was having a bad night, and by looking at his deck, I would say he was.
I wasn't sure this deck would work.
I just don't understand how it played as well as it did.
It helped that I had Flametongue Kabu and Shriekmaw and Bogarden Hellkite to clean up and, you know, take control of the board, you know, stabilize. Those are all going to be two for ones. They're good at defending Planeswalkers.
Oh, don't try to retro-evaluate this.
Fire Ice?
You didn't think
was...
that when you were drafting. You didn't go, I'm going to draft this pile of things and it's all going to be two for ones and Planeswalkers.
Well, the Planeswalker thing was kind of on my mind already, because... Kaz Goodspeed and I kind of jokingly made a Grixis-colored Planeswalker deck.
It's primarily green, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, whatever. It played Planeswalkers, I was playing Planeswalkers, it felt like it was thematically connected. Nico Bolas was in both. Slagstorm was pretty much the best card in my deck. I could almost always cast it because I was main red. It killed Jace the Mind Sculptor, it killed Geist of St. Traft, it killed several of Ed's creatures. Like, Ed's mana dorks.
Yeah, it did. Well, so, again, I passed Slagstorm to you, and this is me thinking that you moved into the red aggro deck, thinking you wouldn't play the card unless it was sideboard, so I didn't expect to see it. That's what I gotta say about your deck. It was everything I feared coming together that came together off of things I passed to you, thinking no one would play them.
One game against you, I kept, like, Badlands, Swamp, Is It Signet, Impulse, figuring that I could hit my third land off of an impulse.
Yeah, we only played two games, so this had to be game one.
This was game one. You noticed it too, I think.
I think I did, because I talked about this with you yesterday, about how your deck somehow never got color screwed, even though it was always color screwed, and I was very annoyed with this, because I think you got lucky against me, based off of your hands, but it seems like, based off of your play record, you somehow were getting lucky continually, so I just don't understand it.
I have four lands that fix, both my Signets fix, and...
None of them are fetch.
I have one fetch land. I have Polluted Delta, which gets all three colors, because I have bad lands. Solemn also fixes.
I know, but in the games against you, it seemed like you had either all black and a red and then a blue off a Signet. Again, we only played two games. Or all blue and a red and a black off a Signet. And that just seemed so high in variance that your deck just wasn't doing the right thing. And then somehow, after I broke one of them, you still got all of your spells in play.
Yeah, usually after I fixed my colors, I ended up getting further into my deck with various cards. Against Kaz... I used Duretti to cycle, like, 10 cards, and that definitely won me a game. Then I immediately sided Duretti out.
Well, I also probably would have won that game. I would have just attacked you instead of Duretti continuously. Maybe that was the third game. Maybe I'm getting them mixed up. But then there was also a game... Well,
Duretti was definitely game one.
I know. I'm trying to think of the game I was holding on to Become Immense.
Become Immense was game three.
Okay.
That's when you had Bitter Blossom and Lingering Souls.
So I guess we should talk about my deck now.
Well, I wanted to transition back to Goodspeed's deck.
Then let's do that before we get into this.
Yeah. So I played against Goodspeed. He goes, like, what was it, a Cloudfin Raptor, then a Mother of Runes to evolve it, I think.
He made this play against me,
Jace.
Too.
Okay. Cloudfin Raptor, Jace Vryn's Prodigy to evolve it. Turn 3, evoke Mauldrifter to evolve it again, which was cute. But then I just played a Flame Tongue combo and killed it, I think.
I had a way to get back. There's something I was going to do with Muldrifter. I had some synergy planned for later in the game.
You treasure cruised with it.
Yeah, that's what it was.
I watched this game, and I was so frustrated with your choices that I chose not to watch them.
So I have a question. Is Experiment 1 in the cube anymore?
No.
And I don't think Cloudfin Raptor should be.
Yeah, Cloudfin Raptor is probably not
Experiment
as good.
1 is better than Cloudfin Raptor.
Yeah. So, Goodspeed, that choice, Ed described it to me. I also thought it was questionable at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You need Muldrifter to win games because your deck doesn't have enough threats. You need it as a creature.
And you had enough draw in your hand after suspending an Ancestral Recall, playing a Preordain, and having a Ponder coming up.
Unless you really need to hit lands or something, I always hold on to Muldrifter.
I did really need to hit lands.
Okay.
Did you also have a Compulsive?
No.
Yes.
You needed to hit lands so you could play the Karn that was sitting in your hand from the opening game, but as soon as you got to turn 7, or like when you had 7 lands on the field, you chose not to play Karn and instead got cute because Paul made a suggestion about playing Treasure Cruise.
That's just not true. I played Treasure Cruise on 5 or 6 mana.
The turn before Ancestral Recall resolved.
It was not the turn I could have played Karn. You pointed out one. So I could have played Compulsive Research. I had no lands in hand. I had to hit an island to play another spell, and then I would have to discard 2 cards in my hand. As I pointed out to Ed after the game, I ended up playing every card in that hand throughout the game. I think the only thing I would call a mistake was not countering Solemn Simulacrum when I put the meta to do that.
Right, but that was turn 3, and you had the ability to make it so that you weren't mana screwed.
Okay, but as I said, I had to draw an island to play a spell, and I didn't want to have to discard 2 cards from that hand.
You ended up discarding them to him anyways. You discarded a Gideon.
But I was never going to play that off of, because I didn't have any white mana.
Again, you're like...
That was before that. That was the Muldrifter turn.
You're discarding threats willfully when you just need them eventually.
I don't think I was ever winning that game, for what it's worth.
Yeah, and maybe that's true, but I don't think you played it correctly.
Sure.
This is why there's a line in the show notes that says this is an intervention.
I know, and I'm just going to point out, I haven't played blue in a year because it's never open.
Right.
And if I don't get to play it, I'm never going to get better at it.
No. So this was just what I was, like, what we wanted to talk about was, I consider you probably in our group the best player of Magic, except for what I saw last night, which was just so horrifyingly bad to me.
I also just didn't care anymore because my deck was terrible. Like, my deck was never winning games.
This is circular logic, too. It's like, you gave up before you ever played a game.
Sure.
It's like, oh, I can't win games because I gave them up, but I gave up because I can't win games.
You sat down against me game one of the entire night and said, this deck cannot win because it has no threats. And then you proceeded to force me to game 3, in which in game 3 I almost lost.
That was ridiculous. That was literally the nut draw for my deck in game 3. In game 2, I think you should have played it out because you still really could have won.
The nut draw for my deck was 32 of 40 cards.
I already explained this to you. I already explained how there were...
Hang on. That was the nut draw for my deck.
I told you after the game, I had to draw, like, the right eight cards in a row to even be in the game, and it happened.
Sorry,
it
I meant
ridiculous.
34 of 40
right.
cards.
I had to minus Jace with Ponder to stay alive in that game, and it works. I hit Karn? I don't remember. I hit something that would save me.
But that's so this is something you should expect, and this is what I was talking about with Paul a little bit when we were talking about blue, was that if you are playing as many cantrips as you are in your deck, you should be expecting when you use one to either hit another cantrip or find something you're looking for, because that is all your deck is. And it seemed like when you were making decisions about when you were drawing cards, you were just thinking, I'm going to net cards and I have no idea what they are, rather than thinking, I need to get a cantrip off of this, because it seemed like you were surprised every time you drew a card of your deck.
You needed to draw cards for the sake of getting threats, but you were drawing cards for the sake of drawing cards.
Okay, but isn't that... It was basically the same thing in my deck.
No, because you discarded the threats. Like, when you got them, you chose not to play them.
But the 2 threats we're talking about are a double white spell when I have no planes, and Karn, which costs 7 mana when I'm on 3
or
mana.
Muldrifter.
A double white spell when you have no planes, and you know you're drawing 6 more cards
in the
next 2 turns.
It was way more than that, but I guess I don't consider...
You ended up getting both of the white, though.
I did.
That wasn't hard to predict. You had Ancestral Suspended, and you knew you could cast Treasure Cruise.
I guess.
And you had a Compulsive Research in your hand.
I guess I just don't consider Muldrifter a threat.
Oh my god.
Which I guess is the mistake.
That is the big mistake.
Okay.
Because if Muldrifter just said draw 3 cards, it should just be Harmonize, which is a fantastic card.
It does.
But why is blue paying 5 for Harmonize?
Muldrifter is Divination.
Oh, it's even worse. and it costs 5. So clearly, the cost is higher for a reason, which is an evasive 2-2.
I mean, it gave me an evasive 2-3 when I played it. I don't know.
It's a 2-3.
Okay.
No,
it's a 2-2. It made Cloud from Raptor into a 2-3, is my point.
It did. I know I'm playing red-black, if you think about it. Like, you know I'm going to be stacked in removal.
I guess. Remember how much removal I saw going around? I knew you had a slag storm. That might have been it, though.
That was the only removal I saw, too. This draft was so weird, because I saw, like, barely any of what I thought people had.
Yeah, I picked one Lightning Bolt. Flametongue Kavu and Shriekmaw went around.
I knew you had Flametongue Kavu.
I felt so confused this draft about what people were playing. Like, I knew what colors were being played, but I felt so confused about what cards people were playing, just because of what was wheeling. I just was so confused by the choices people were making that I just had no idea what
so,
anyone was trying to do.
So, what did you think Goodspeed was playing, just...
When we were sitting down and playing the wheel, I knew Goodspeed was in blue.
Okay.
When we were actually drafting, I was like, Goodspeed is in blue, but cards from blue were wheeling that I just didn't think should have been, and it was really, really confusing to me.
Yeah, so you were passing to me, right?
Yeah.
So what did you think I was playing?
I thought... So I passed to you... So off of pack one, I'm trying to remember. I remember passing to you and thinking... I thought at the end of pack one that you were moving into either the red deck with Paul...
Oh.
Or that you were in white. And I was right about the white. Because in the second pack, it was obvious to me that you were in white.
Okay.
Because the only card that I got that was white that was good was Swords. And that was because I opened it, I think.
That was how I got Gideon.
But...
Yeah. So,
I correctly judged the colors people were in. I just had no idea the strategies they were in. Because people were playing strategies I was not ready for.
Okay.
Mostly a pile. Me playing green, which I was not ready for. Goodspeed playing just only cantrip blue. Which wasn't tempo blue.
Did you pass me a Bitter Blossom, or did somebody else?
I passed you a Bitter Blossom.
Okay. At that point, you should say, Kaz is playing black.
And no.
I fucking love black.
No, and I'm pretty sure I thought that you were going to tokens.
Okay,
then, which
right.
You did go into tokens, but that was
sort of,
pack two, kind of.
Okay, yeah.
And, I passed you the Bitter Blossom knowing that, but I think I also passed an equipment in that pack, and I wasn't sure if you were going to take it or Bitter Blossom, and I don't remember what it was.
Yeah.
But I was pretty sure you were going to take Bitter Blossom, because those were the two cards. I was thinking of land, or, like, it was Misty... That pick for me was Misty Rainforest, which was the first time I had seen fetch land in this cube.
And all of a sudden, your
and all
world
of a sudden,
changed.
My world was just like, oh god, I'm drafting a completely different deck than I thought I was, because I thought that fetch lands weren't in the cube. And... a Bitter Blossom, and I went, I could play either of these, and I really love Bitter Blossom, but I'm just going to take the Misty because it's probably the right thing to do.
So, should I talk about my deck now, or...
Yeah, let's do that.
Good. When I was playing, I don't know if it was correct, but pack one, pick one, I took Stoneforge Mystic, which is actually not a great...
That's really speculative.
It is incredibly speculative.
To me, that sounds in the same way that I told Goodspeed that taking Jace was a little bit weird for, like, Rizzlebrand.
Yeah.
For me to take Stoneforge Mystic, I would want to have Batterscholar Jitte in my deck already.
Yeah, I agree. I think I looked at the other cards and I was very disappointed with everything there, and I thought Stoneforge, like, this was a sort of mental, like, if I managed to get... And it's fact, because, like, there's not very, like, super high-profile equipment you really want with Stoneforge. Like, you want the Jitte, you want Batterskull.
Right.
And that's kind of it. Like, there's some other equipments which go into decks, but those are that's basically what you want.
When your deck is full of 1/1 flyers, you're not going to turn down a Bone Splitter.
Well, yeah, I should have taken Bone Splitter.
Well, he
I
did,
know what
apparently.
I took over it. But I did not take Bone Splitter. So that was probably the wrong pick, but I just remember being disgusted with the rest of the pack, just like, fuck this pack, and so I took Stoneforge Mystic.
So just as a heads up, though, even though it sounds like Haz may have made a poor choice on this first choice... I think in our group, I widely regard Goodspeed as the best player of Magic, and Kaz as the best deck builder of Magic in our group.
Really?
When we draft, you seem to make the most combo-tastic, synergistic deaths I have ever seen.
I guess I do. I guess I do that.
When we give you the time. If we put you on a time draft, you may just be the worst drafter in the world.
Oh my god, no, dude. I got a little better, right? I'm a little more on time.
Anyways, comfort. You were talking about your first pick being...
Yeah, I was Stoneforge Mystic. I don't remember what I took after that.
When did you get Batterskull?
That was also great. Like, oh, Stoneforge Mystic. And then pack one, pick one. Pack two, pick one was Batterskull. I'm like, all right, I was rewarded.
That's like when I take Ashiok, and then pack two, I open up, like, as pack one, pick one, and then pack two, I open up Jace the Mind Sculptor, and I was like, yes.
That's going to go well.
I think then it was Batter Skull, and then I was immediately past Bitter Blossom. I was like, all right.
Yeah. All right, so Bitter Blossom.
We got something. And then I was like, and then because of those two, pack three, out of the cards that were available, there was a bunch of cards which are actually pretty good, and then there's Enlightened Tutor. I'm like, okay, I got Bitter Blossom, and I've got Batter Skull. So I'm just taking Enlightened Tutor immediately.
Oh, I remember passing Enlightened Tutor.
Oh, did you? So that wasn't my pack one.
Oh.
So how well
pack three pick one.
How well do you remember all of your one drops?
Oh, God. Well, there's a picture in front of him, so I would bet pretty well.
Just read them. Go for it.
I'm not done with the drafting portion. Give me a second.
I want to... This transitions perfectly into what I characterized as Sophie's choice.
Okay, all right. So I picked Bloodsoaked Champion, Soldier of the Pantheon, Elite Vanguard, Martyr Will Reaper, and those are the creatures. Do you want me to keep going?
Brave the Elements and Light and Tutor Vendetta. Perfect.
Sure, yeah.
So... basically, it comes down to, on turn one, choose one, either tutor for Bitter Blossom or play a 2-1 for
yes,
one.
And it was, oh my god. No, yeah, this is actually why I think my deck lost more games than it should. There's two reasons why my deck lost more games than it should. One, I thought I was picking Bitter Blossom, Lingering Souls. I thought I could fit it into Aggressive Shell. And honestly, it works so much better in, like, mid-rangey control combo, whatever. Like, it doesn't actually work that well in Aggressive Shell.
Works better in everything else.
Yes, basically. Lingering Souls seems like it could be an aggressive card. And, like...
I've done that
Bitter
thing.
Blossom
oh
turn
boy,
two is pretty, like...
Oh boy, let's talk about our games.
hold on. We'll get there. So that is the main problem. And in fact, I guess this points back to my drafting. Through the first two packs, I had no idea what the fuck I knew I was in white-black. I had strong cards in white-black. But I was still, like, Bitter Blossom, Lingering Souls, Batter Skull. I don't know when I got Enlightened Tutor. Stoneforge Mystic. And I had a... And then I had a Cloud Goat Ranger and like a smattering of removal spells. I'm like, all right, where the fuck am I going? Because I didn't... And
I think it might have been pick two out of pack one.
Okay. Was Enlightened Tutor?
Yeah. I think I might have had Enlightened Tutor in my first pack.
And that doesn't make any sense for me to go, Stoneforge is going to Enlightened Tutor.
I know.
That's really, really, like,
you're
over,
cutting,
like...
You were cutting...
I'm so getting this Batter Skull.
But I really think that it might have been pick one.
I mean, you could have taken Enlightened Tutor, like, pick seven.
You could have, yeah.
Okay. I think it wheeled.
It could have wheeled. I just remember seeing it in pack one.
So yeah, so I had those cards. I had Tide Howl Sculler. I had a Knight's Whisper. And so, like, removal spells. And it's like, okay, where am I going with this? And I didn't have quite the basis for a control deck. or aggro. And so I was going to the pack three. I'm like, what am I doing? And I saw Bremas. I'm just like, fuck it. I had to pick. And I didn't pick immediately even in pack three. And so all my aggressive cards came from pack three. So I was not even an aggro deck until pack three. Which is another problem my deck had a little bit.
This looks like it was concepted as an aggro deck. It doesn't look weak.
I got a lot out of that pack.
This deck played really well and was difficult to play against. I remember against Kaz, I just had the absolute fucking nut draws.
This deck should have done better than it did. I'll get into the buck Kayla later. So, like, the reason was, yeah, like, I want to play my one drops, or I want to Enlightened Tutor into Bitter Blossom. And, like, those are really at odds, and I don't know which one's more aggressive. And I had to make that choice all the time.
Yeah.
I never had it easy. Ever.
Against me, I think you chose to Bitter Blossom, at least in game three. Maybe game two as well.
Can I describe turns one, two, and three of both of our games?
Yes.
same three for three cards.
Wait, this is the nut draw, though.
It went Enlightened Tutor into Bitter Blossom into Lingering Soul. It's just like, all right, Kaz, I'm never winning. I think it went Batter Skull in the first game and something else better in the second game.
Oh, yeah. This is the game where you played...
Yeah, that was Shellback Isle into two lands, Ancestral Visions, and Treasure Cruise. Think about it now, you definitely put Treasure Cruise underneath it. No, sorry, you definitely put Ancestral Visions underneath it, but I might have put Treasure Cruise under
it. It was Ancestral.
You put Ancestral because it's cuter. Yeah. You can cast it for real.
It's also correct because you have to suspend it
yes.
if you draw it again.
So I will say that Enlightened Tutor and Bitter Blossom is still incredibly powerful, and I did that at least six times.
I know.
At least six fucking games I did that. Turn one, turn two. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
You never played it against me.
No, I did not. And the other reason, other than being, like, aggro crashing a bit that I lost, I think, is I lost so much fucking life.
Oh my god. No, let's talk about that for a second. So, I, again, in this weird cube draft that I thought I was doing that no one else seems to think was going on, did not know Shocklands were in the cube until pack three, when I saw Temple Garden. And I was just like, what the hell is going on? But against Kaz, like, turn one, it was... shock fat or like fetch shock lose 3 life play a creature. I was just like, oh god, Kaz has lost so much life already.
Oh my god, you have 2 yes. fetch lands, they're both white, and you have 4 dual lands, they're all white. It's just like
yeah.
a fetch land is a oh wow.
And I don't know why you got Temple Garden instead of Scrubland.
If you were just playing Abzan aggro the
or
entire
Savannah.
Draft. This would be absurd.
I have no idea. I can't answer that question.
I don't know. I just watched you do it and was like, wow. And then you played a Scrubland later and I was like, oh, he needed green. But now knowing you had a Savannah, I'm just confused.
I don't know. Maybe I just couldn't find it. Like, we're, but,
just look for the borderline.
So do you want to know my life loss? So I have those 2 Shocklands, which every single game I had to play a Shockland. Like, and I felt like I got Shocklands way more than like statistically should have been able to, so I know I was always losing life to them because I always need to play things in turn 1 and turn 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I had Vendetta, which I lost a lot of life.
Oh god, there was a game that you Vendetta'd me and lost
I had,
like 8.
Yeah. I had Porcelain Legionnaire, which I always paid the life for. I had Bitter Blossom, which constantly lost my life. Nice Whisper loses me 2 life. I had Dismember, which I always paid
you
more
always,
life for.
Yeah, you paid life for.
Good thing you have Margin Row Reaper.
Yeah, right.
Margin Row Reaper gave me 1 life. I made the joke
in all of the
Kaz.
Games.
I made the joke against Kaz, like, oh, so you fetched because you were going to be able to play Margin Row Reaper and you knew you'd get life back. Now I understand it. And then he just kept paying life and had nothing to gain it.
Oh, God, where's my Batterskull?
Pretty much. I only got Batterskull out once. It was against you, I think.
That's not true.
No, that's not
nope.
true. Okay.
You killed me with it in game 2.
All right.
You also had it out against me.
You basically played Braids, and I just completely flooded.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And, like,
let's
never...
talk about that game, or those games that we had. So the first game was, like, that was when you talked about earlier with Duretti, and, like, you literally had nothing.
I killed... I think 2 of your creatures. It might have been like Slagstorm, Flame Tongue Kavu, and then you killed Flame Tongue Kavu. And it's like, okay, I have a Duretti in play and nothing is happening in this game. I'm just gonna keep throwing cards away. I was throwing away like lightning bolts and stuff just to draw anything that mattered. Anything proactive.
And I had some threats on the board that I was attacking you with. I think I had a chance if I would be attacking you. But
you had like a 1/1 and maybe something else later.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I don't remember anymore. But yeah, basically the board stalled and you just went through like 8 cards with Duretti.
Your threats weren't threatening enough to keep down Duretti's +2 ability.
Yeah, I think I was dealing like 2 and then later 3 damage at it or something. I don't know.
That sounds right.
But it was enough turns that I feel like I actually could have got a lot of damage against you. It's like I probably should have been attacking you. Like I probably got like 8 damage against you.
Maybe. I might have just played Bogard and Hellkite at some point in that game and just won.
And then there was game 2 where like... I didn't play a whole lot, and then I played... We didn't have anything going on, then I played Braids, and so we both just kept sacrificing a land, like, 5 turns in a row, we both just sacrificed a land.
We both had plenty of land.
Because
like,
that's all we were drawing.
We weren't missing land drops, but you did keep me from casting Nico Volos, because he was in my hand that game.
Yeah.
And then you needed to get 1 more land to Batterskull, so when you sacrificed Braids eventually, it was like, okay, next turn, Batterskull, and the
yeah.
game was over. I think I played out Tazzeret, and you just killed it, and I was like, okay, this is stupid.
Yeah. Yeah, and then Tide Hollow Sculler was fun. I played Tide Hollow Sculler against you a lot.
Tide Hollow Sculler taking away...
Fire Ice.
Okay, kill it, get back Fire Ice.
It took you a while to kill it.
Sure. Yeah. Game,
and they got in some damage.
So game 3 was really the closest game there, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Game 3, I got a Nico Bolas out at some point. But you had both Lingering Souls and Bitter Blossom going on. I think it was Enlightened Tutor, Bitter Blossom, Lingering Souls, like we talked about with Goodfeed.
Yeah, so there you
and
go.
But I had a Solemn Simulacrum and a Jite that led
that
into a Nico Bolas.
That Jite won you that game.
Undoubtedly.
That was so frustrating.
If you had traded with Solemn, I would have eventually been screwed. I think. I'm not positive.
Yeah, maybe.
You never did. I kept putting counters on. I was like, okay, kill a spirit, leave a counter on it to react to whatever you're doing or something.
I think
know.
I was trying to find a removal spell. I don't even know my
you
reasoning
You had
for that.
Become Immense in hand. I did not know this.
Yeah, right.
And you claimed that you were...
Yes, I...
Were within 1 damage of killing me at some point.
Yeah, so that was the thing. I played white-black, I splashed green, and I splashed a lot of green. Like, there's a lot of sources of green.
Yes,
for just a single Become Immense.
free splash. Maybe, except for the life.
You have at least four green sources.
And usually we talk about all of our decks beforehand, and I was just like, okay, like, and I make my deck in front of everybody, but I just had one card turned over, and it was Become a Mess.
Oh, that's a valid?
Yeah.
Oh.
I was like, alright, I'm not going to reveal this card.
That's nice. You put it in the one drops file, I remember.
Yeah,
it is. It is, duh.
Kind of.
And yeah, so I had enough fairies and lingering souls on board, but it was a lot of math, because I also had to think about how the Jitte was going to interact, and...
You have another way to gain life, I just noticed.
Yeah.
Soldier of the Pantheon.
Never came up.
I mean, does anyone remember that trigger? Not usually.
I killed it as soon as that hit the board.
With the Swords to Plowshares. So this was game three, and I had already seen Brave the Elements. And no matter when this was, I had at least one counter on my Jitte.
Okay.
So, if there is a conceivable world where I remember to gain two life instead of trying to target one of your spirits, and then, like, you protect it with Brave the Elements, and then cast Become Immense to kill me. Like,
that was basically my plan, yes.
Yeah, so if I gain the two life, I stay in the game. And that's confusing. We don't know how that ends. It's close. It was exciting.
And so when I did play against Caleb, I did win a game, though, with all my spirits, and then exactly Become Immense, just for exact damage. I'm like, all right, this feels good.
Like a Hidatsugu.
Yeah.
This deck should have done better, but that's okay. Everybody had fun, whatever.
What was your final record?
It was 1-3.
Really?
Yeah,
I know. You lost to Caleb?
Yeah, I know. Caleb I really shouldn't have lost to. First off, he had no right to have good mana, but apparently he did.
He was playing Esper off of one non-basic land.
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
And it was a tap land.
Wait, what? A shock land?
No, a tap land. It was a man land.
I did lose one game, too, where there's another interesting thing. So I had to choose between turn one Enlightened Tutor into Bitter Blossom, or turn one One Drop into turn two Stoneforge Mystic into turn three Batterskull. And so I chose the One Drop Stoneforge Mystic Batterskull, which ended up being the wrong choice.
Really?
Yeah.
That generally sounds strong.
That's why I thought that I chose it over that.
But who are you playing against?
Caleb.
Oh, okay.
And so he was just able to bounce those things easier, whereas, like, he can't get rid of Bitter Blossom.
Caleb does have three bounce spells in his deck.
But I mean, I really did want to do Stoneforge Mystic and do immediately Batterskull.
Why is he playing Delver?
that was what I tweeted about when I tweeted his deck.
I think he had a very off day.
He said as much, too.
Yeah.
He did say that. So, Caleb's deck to me looks like the pile Paul's did, except without fixing.
See, my deck was like, you know, all the way to the left with low drops, and like one and two drops, and all the way to the right with a couple finishers.
No, I agree.
But my four column was pretty full, but it was like one full column over. Caleb's deck is six and seven drops.
And nothing to ramp him to them.
Pretty much, yeah.
So he did play a Jace against me on turn four both games, which is nice.
Yeah, this is just like a poor concept, I think, is what it was. Maybe it was just like one of those ones where you don't look at the cards that you're drafting, you're just drafting good cards.
Take good speed's deck and Caleb's deck and throw them in a blender and just deal the cards out randomly, and you probably have two decks that both have draw spells and finishers,
and they probably are very good.
Yup.
Honestly, they probably are very good.
I'm gonna look at his deck and try to name the card I thought would wheel. Sphinx's Revelation I thought for sure would come back. Dragonlord Silmgar and Frost Titan I both kind of thought would too. Oh, Frost Titan was unlikely, but it was possible.
Okay, so I agree with you on Sphinx's Revelation. The other two you should not have thought.
Dragonlord Silmgar?
You passed. Pick one, Grizzlebrand.
Sure.
You should never think that a blue white creature is going to
be
from then on.
I could tell the support for a Grizzlebrand deck wasn't there from the cards I was seeing. Especially because I took Show and Tell.
You don't know that because you have no idea if someone hit Reanimate.
Sure.
And that's all it takes for someone to go into black.
I guess.
Also, Liliana was not open today, and I don't think you knew that.
I never saw
like,
her.
So that's my point. There are so many things that you just didn't... I don't know.
Sure,
I would not have been convinced sitting at your seat seeing the cards that were going around that someone wasn't in Reanimator.
I mean...
I guess not.
I don't think there were a ton of blue-black cards open. There was Ashiok, Silengar, and Talia.
And I got Ashiok. That's a big part of this, too.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the pack.
You
I
got
passed
Ashiok,
Silengar, and then got
he
Ashiok.
He got Silengar. Yeah. I got Tezzeret.
I think that was the same pick for both of us.
Were you past Ashiok?
Yes, from you two.
Yeah, I passed it. You passed it to me. That sounds right. Okay.
It was pick three. Okay. It was pack two, pick three,
okay.
I think.
I didn't think I was in blue
someone take Dragonlord Silengar over Ashiok?
No.
Okay, all right.
I remember remember passing. I do remember passing Ashiok in Pack 2, because I remember going, the one day I will ever pass an Ashiok.
If I knew I was blue at this point, I would have taken it for sure, but
it's pretty much solidified being blue, I guess.
In Pack 3, I picked up the red-blue filter land, and I think I picked up Izzet Signet, and I remembered that I had a polluted Delta, and I was like, oh. Actually, I can play blue cards.
Wait, the polluted Delta that was actually,
Look at all these...
The sacrifice
thing. Look at all these double white
about.
And double black and triple... And double blue and a white, double blue and a white,
yeah,
and double black. Fuck. I think he mana drained me on turn fucking two.
Yeah, point being, we're very confused by looking at his mana cost, how he was going
to... We all have a reason to be upset with this deck.
Caleb was upset with it, too.
Yeah.
For good reason.
I kind of wish I'd played him now, to be honest with you.
When I played against Caleb, he just wasn't casting spells, and I thought he had counter magic, but he never played the counter magic either. I think he just couldn't cast his spells in retrospect. I won by accidentally putting... I shuffled my sideboard in by accident, because I thought it was part of my deck, and I took the cards out, but I mistakenly left a Smokestacks in my main deck and a polluted Delta in my sideboard. And then I drew Smokestacks, and I was like, okay.
Smokestacks, huh, with five creatures.
And Smokestacks just crushed him.
He was super flooded.
I think he had five lands, Tameo, and Detention Sphere in play, and I was just like, tick up, tick up, tick up. I had 15 permanents, and they were all mana sources.
That was the 12 counters on Shrine game.
Oh, yeah. I was picking up Shrine and two Planeswalkers and Smokestacks by the end of it. I was like, this game is going to come to a conclusion.
Contagion class for cube.
No.
I love it.
It would probably more be...
Can I errata Contagion clasp to be like 1.5 and tap, proliferate?
What?
Wait, does it cost money to tap and proliferate?
It costs
money?
4.
What is this, mana? Is this a kvetch land?
Okay, Contagion clasp is an artifact from Scars of Mirrodin block. It costs 2. When it enters, put a -1/-1 counter on target creature. Then it has 4 and tap, proliferate.
4?
Yeah.
Why is that bad?
4.
4?
How are you complaining about this?
4 is
That's
a lot.
Expensive.
I would rather it cost 4 to play and, 2 to proliferate.
So
proliferating is so fucking good.
It's only one.
The other option is Contagion
if
Engine.
Any number of counters you control can go up.
It was at one point.
Sure.
A long
but
time
it's still
ago.
Only up by 1. I understand this really good.
I cannot explain to you how good that is. You didn't play with Proliferate.
Well, okay, I did, though. I did in Modern Masters 2015. I have a vague idea of Proliferate, how good it can be.
Contagion Clasp was very good.
The 4 is so low.
Proliferate is a very swingy mechanic. Yeah.
I think 4 is high. It is not an absurd cost on that. I think that is totally understandable.
So, I have Ed's vote to put it in, I think. Kaz seems to like it.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Good speed.
What card?
Contagion Clasp, the one we described.
That's Contagion Engine Kaz.
God, give me a second. I don't. It's even got sweet alternate. Oh, that's kind of ugly.
I don't. I don't care. I don't. What, is it replacing something?
No.
Then I don't care. Whatever. Sure.
It's replacing Ankh of Mishra.
My point
no.
is, I would try.
Not okay with
see
that.
If you could do it.
At this point, wouldn't we want to put in the Chain Veil instead?
No, because there's things that care about counters
we
that aren't
not
planeswalkers.
Putting in Chain Veil.
Oh.
I don't know what Chain Veil does.
It,
I know what it is.
It
in
costs
the story.
More mana to do
if you want
some
Chain
of
Veil,
the same thing.
Oh, ask for a Johnny to just be back
also
in.
Also costs 4.
Which Johnny?
The one that lets you activate planeswalkers. Or ask just for your stupid fucking commander one to be in.
What?
What?
Your blue commander that does this.
Teferi.
Teferi.
Yeah, ask for Teferi to be in if that's what you want is to
be
able to activate
shit.
Planeswalkers.
It's pretty bad.
Multiple times a turn.
It's a lot of mana.
It's too much mana. But he's really. What's the one?
That
is it
one?
This one? Oh yeah, Johnny's.
I think with the other cards in this cube, you are underestimating Proliferate.
This is +1/+1.
And I think that you will be severely surprised how good it is.
Yeah. I don't like that.
I mean, I could play it with
whatever.
Curse of Predation.
You could play it with Jitay. You could play it with any of the Planeswalkers.
You could play it with Jitay.
Let's put in Doubling Season.
You could play it with the Red Green Land.
Let's put in Doubling Season so we can ultimate all of our Planeswalkers immediately.
The Red Green Land. Oh, okay. Yeah, I got it. Raging Ravine.
They're ignoring you because that's a bad idea.
I didn't listen.
You can play it with Awaken.
I said, let's put in Doubling Seas.
You can play it with any of the Awaken spells that are in, or maybe going in. I don't know if they're in. We talked about them once, and I don't know if they went in.
None of them are in.
We talked about them, and you were going to put a few in, so I assumed they were in. And
I was excited, but then nobody liked the one that I wanted to put in the most.
Well, which one did you want? You wanted to put in Clutch Currents?
Yeah.
Well, the thing is, you want to take out Vapor Snag, and I love Vapor Snag.
I don't know why all you guys like Vapor Snag, because you play it in the wrong decks. Not if you play it in a tempo deck.
That's the only time I play Vapor Snag.
Don't you dare say none of you.
I was trying to make.
I have played it very successfully in mono blue.
It also helps if you're just a later game deck and you can't deal with any early threats. It's just the fallback, like, oh, well, I have Vapor Snag, I guess.
But then you have to try to win the game then.
Vapor Snag is the tits.
If you just...
You all keep saying that.
If you just hold off one extra turn, sometimes that's enough.
I have never in my life been upset to be casting a Vapor Snag.
In the exact same way, I have never been upset to be casting Noxious Revival.
I have to think that you are overrating Vapor Snag.
I'm
apparently alone here, and that's why I like the card. That's why I got a foil of it. I think it's cool. I don't think it's being played well in the cube.
You can put in Clutch instead, but I think Vapor Snag is better.
I'm not gonna put Clutch of Currents in over Vapor Snag.
Do you know what other two cards should just be out of the cube because no one's ever pulled them off?
Cloudfin Raptor.
Okay, we'll put Cloudfin Raptor on there. But I'm looking at Caleb's deck and I see one of them and it made me remind me of the other one.
Jeez,
which are Brago and Venser.
Brago. No, Venser's... Oh, the Planeswalker?
Yes.
Okay.
Venser the Planeswalker.
Yeah.
You know, the Flash deck has always been sort... The Flicker deck has always been sort of there.
It's a concept. No one has ever pulled it off.
Well,
I have personally tried to draft it and just thought, this is fucking terrible while I'm drafting it and switched.
Momentary Blink is in now.
So...
Just to point that out.
We had a similar expression... A similar expression expressed about Nico Bolas. No one's ever played this card. I don't even know why it's in the cube. Like, this is
registered. Who said that? I said that about Nico Bolas and Brewmate Dragon like once every 4 months, and then somebody plays them and it's just awesome, and then I shut up for 4 months.
Ed said something similar.
I said the thing about Nico Bolas last night because I would never pick Nico Bolas over things like Karn.
Sure.
If you're restricted and you end up with a Nico Bolas, I'm just disappointed because I didn't get the Planeswalker I wanted. However, if it does what Paul did, which is play it on turn 4, of course it's going to win you the game.
Okay, I played it on all different turns of the game, and it won me every game I played it, which was like 5 games.
Against me, if you had not resolved it until turn 5, you would have lost.
In that case, I'd like to think I had some other spell to play that game.
But you didn't.
I am okay.
You actually didn't.
But then I wouldn't have kept that hand, because it would have just sucked.
I am okay with there being cards in the cube that are only good in a very limited number of times, but when they're good, they just win you
but
the game.
But they're both combo pieces that have to go together for them to be good.
Well, what's the other card we're talking about?
Like, Brago?
Sure.
Has to be played with other cards that have flicker, like, enter the battlefield effects on them. Granted, that could be good, but there just don't seem to be that many white-blue cards that you want to do the win.
Sure.
There's a lot of blue ones. There's maybe a few less white cards.
Like, all
white
creatures.
Why does the best one? Why does Restoration Angel?
Well, that's like a loop. That doesn't do anything.
What does that do?
Restoration Angel is just the best creature, period. Like, you don't
Right,
need
but
to
what does
deck.
Restoration Angel Brago do?
Oh, I'm not talking about that.
That's what we're
Restoration
talking
Angel
about.
I will admit, Caleb is the only person I've ever seen resolve Brago.
I tried to make this deck before, but it was back when the cube was newer, and I did pretty well with it. I don't know how it works right now.
The only time I played against Brago, Caleb thought it could flicker lands, and I didn't read the card.
It can.
No, it can't. That would be fucking stupid.
It can flicker Signet.
It untaps something.
It just means it doubles
it
your mana.
It flickers everything. It flickers non-land permanents.
Okay.
It lets you minus your Planeswalkers continuously.
That's what it flickered. Okay.
In blue,
I knew it was something really weird, and it was Planeswalkers.
In blue, at least, we have Augur of Bolas, Riftwing, Cloudsgate, Snapcaster Mage, Aether Adept, Manowar, Pastermite, Vendilion Click. Clever Impersonator can get some benefit from it. Glenelundra can get benefit from it. Master of Waves, Sower, Venser, Mold. Drifter.
Master of Waves, oh my
if
god.
If I'm playing any...
Frost Titan.
I know, but if I'm... You can't target your Frost Titan with it, or you have to pay mana. If I'm...
Still do it.
And opponent controls.
Do you... You don't have to?
That's correct.
Oh, that's cool.
Detention Sphere.
That's my response to that, is Frost Titan is better.
Detention Sphere, exile a bunch of tokens, flicker it.
Okay, so... I agree. There are targets for it. However, no one has done it.
This deck is going to happen someday.
Okay.
It would not surprise me at all if it ends up being three colors or maybe even four.
I have never seen it successfully done. I've tried to do it, and it didn't work.
Lie of Sky Knight.
Lie of Sky Knight's great. But the other thing is, what other blue-white cards would replace it, though? Like, it's a little... I'm trying to think.
Narset.
Narset! Yes,
no,
Narset!
Don't bring it up!
Yes, Narset! No. So let's leave Brego in, but Narset instead of Venser.
I don't hate that, but I don't also have an informed opinion, so...
I might prefer Venser.
Has anyone cast Venser?
No.
Sure, probably.
No.
Did anyone ever want to draft Venser? I can consider drafting Brego. I can consider drafting Brego, but has anyone ever thought of casting and playing a Venser?
No, I'll put Narset in if you lend it to me.
Yes. Done.
I'm fine with getting
Dragon
Venser,
Lord Ojutai.
Right.
I love Narset.
Why isn't Dragonlord Ojutai in here?
Well, Ojutai could be. I have two, actually. Maybe I just have one. I think I have one.
I have
one.
Two.
Yeah, I was borrowing two of yours. I had three in the deck. That's what it was.
I feel like Ojutai is kind of an obvious one, but I don't know. Maybe people don't like it that much.
I am always opposed to putting in creatures that have protection from things.
Oh, that's true. Ojutai does.
I am always opposed to that.
Ojutai has the sort of temporary protection thing.
So did that fucking angel.
Yeah, that angel, you can play instant to get rid of and just untap it. It's so obnoxious.
Just my point is, if a creature is specifically blue and has a protection on it, I really think it should not exist.
Yeah.
You're not untapping...
So you're fine with Aetherling.
We're not putting Minamo in, I guess, is my point.
Aetherling has protection you have to pay for.
At that point, you got all the mana in the world to pay for.
Just saying. Although I agree that Aetherling can be abused, and I have done it.
I think
straight protection just is not on blue cards specifically.
It's hexproof.
I think Ojutai is more okay
hexproof
than Aetherling.
Is protection.
Sure.
Aetherling is the kind of card I let go in the cube because I knew Ed wanted it. And that's fine. But it's also the kind of card that's making me reconsider my stance on Consecrated Sphinx.
Consecrated Sphinx for cube. Come on.
Oh, well, we're not anywhere yet. This is just a joke.
Actually, this is a pretty good transition. Did you guys hear that Vraska is coming back?
Well,
no. When?
We don't know. They have just confirmed that she is going to return at some point.
So you must be talking about Morrow's if-when list.
I am. I believe there were two Planeswalkers confirmed as Wens to return. It was Vraska and Tibble.
Okay, I hope they come in the same set so they can just be super cool.
They can be best.
I think they're gonna try real hard this time on Tibble.
They can be the best dressed couple at the Planeswalker proms.
Yeah, probably.
Jace has two dates, so he uses an illusion to pretend he's with both.
You know what I was just thinking about?
Narset's a wallflower.
Since we're talking about best-dressed Planeswalkers, isn't it kind of funny that there isn't a Planeswalker who just, like, is completely raving mad and runs around naked?
It's a little weird.
I mean, it is a PG-13 game.
Oh, that's true.
Yes, I could see Garrick wearing, like, a loincloth.
I just can imagine, like, in some Planeswalker thinking that they have to not wear clothes to Planeswalk. Like a goblin. And it would just be the funniest thing ever.
You know who that would be the most fitting for? Gideon. Because he was a Greek guy. He could have been totally nude when he Planeswalked the first time. Like, Hyksos penetrates him a little too hard, and then he...
Stop.
Well, then.
That transition went so well.
Alright, so I'm just gonna go over the things I think are interesting, because I haven't actually read this list yet.
I don't really remember any of them, I'll be honest.
Fairy Tale World, not Lorwyn, is a when? That's weird. Why would you not go back to Lorwyn? The existence of Modern makes Lorwyn infinitely more popular in retrospect. It's because every Lorwyn card is good in Modern.
Wait, did you mean Lorwyn? I'm sorry. I was making a joke about how Modern is just Lorwyn the format.
I was repeating that sentiment that you didn't repeat in the first place.
I did last night.
Well, that works with reiterate.
What were you going to say, Kaz?
So what would the fairy tale, like, what would the fairy tale world be that's not Lorwyn? Like, what the hell are they thinking about?
I'm not the one who answered this question.
I would be super excited if there was, like, a... Okay, so fairies in, like, the Japanese sense is what I would love.
They're probably going to bring... If they're going to bring back fairies, they're going to go to Lorwyn.
I want,
like it's going to be different.
I want, like, the terrifying but cute thing that is on, like, Una's Prowler.
Which is from Lorwyn.
Okay. I would like that, but the plane. And if that's how Lorwyn was, I understand why people loved it.
That's how Shadowmoor was.
That is more of a Shadowmoor thing.
But that's what I would like.
Shadowmoor was really
I haven't
cool.
seen that in a while. But instead we're going to get vampires again. Though I'm kind of excited about that, but slightly not excited about that.
I mean, the fairies were also often shirtless, but they don't really have skin. They have, like exoskeletons.
I'm not
carapace.
Talking about shirtless. What I was talking about is just, like, the cool concept for a world. And in Magic... We haven't recently been to a plane that has that kind of interest in it.
Yeah, I agree with you. I would like to go back to...
Like, there isn't, like, a fairy tale plane right now. We have, like, we're on Zendikar, which is, like, the Indiana Jones plane.
It used to be.
Kind of, yeah.
Now it's the Cosmicor plane.
We were just on, like, Mongol plane with dragons.
It was all kinds of East Asian
things. Yeah, because it was ruined by dragons.
We recently were on the all-Greek plane.
That plane was boring as fuck.
Before that, we were on, like... I don't know, Europe? With
Ravnica?
With magic? Europe with magic? I don't know what
Ravnica
I thought about Europe.
Ravnica was kind of disappointing.
Ravnica was just weird. It didn't feel like it was a plane that had any interest in it. It was just like, there's a maze on this plane. That was what the plane...
And then there was Innistrad, which was cool, and then Skars, which was cool.
Right, Europe. But they have like... Yeah, I don't know why.
And you didn't call it Coruscant?
I don't know. It just didn't seem like... But we had, like... Okay, so then we had Innistrad, which is, like, this whole, the quote-unquote grim, dark vampire plane.
Which we're going to next.
Which we've already been to. Sure. We had Phyrexia, which is, like... New Phyrexia, which is, like, the coolest place ever.
Yep.
Agreed by everyone.
Everyone we know.
And then... We haven't, like, there are so many types of interesting things we could go to, but instead we're going
what
back to Innistrad,
like,
which is one of the new planes we just went to.
What is a Phyrexia?
Good speed.
I know.
Here's a when for you.
Here's a when for you, New Phyrexia.
Return to Theros is a when.
Yeah,
what are you fucking serious?
It even has mistakenly answered if prior.
Okay. So what I hope that means is return to Theros when the Eldrazi have already fucked it entirely.
Yes, Emrakul destroys all the gods.
Look,
I would love to see that fight.
Let me defend Theros for like a minute.
Start the clock.
It was flavorfully really cool. All of the flavor of Theros worked really well, it just didn't work mechanically, I think.
But it was flavorfully...
It is so freaking boring!
You're right. They needed some greater conflict than Xenagos became a god. I agree with you there. But the flavor of the world is cool. I like the world, this Greek world, it works really well. They just need to have a compelling plot. It doesn't need to involve Eldrazi, I think the gods are gonna have left.
Okay,
the plot that they did have was incredibly more interesting if you read up on it. It was the one where, like, where Ashiok was the villain, and so where, like, because they played up the whole Nyx and how it's dreams and whatever,
sure.
And Ashiok is, like, the Nightmare Weaver, and so Ashiok became the villain in, like, some sort of dream world or whatever. I'm far more interested in that than Greek. I don't know if it's just me, though.
Okay, so maybe this is just because I studied Greek mythology when I was younger.
Sure.
But literally all they did was steal stories from other things.
Right, but...
Like, the Ashiok thing being evil and stealing dreams was just them stealing the mythology about the dream god.
That's what they do for any world, though. You can say that about any plane they've made. It's
okay, so I don't know much about Mongol history, but do they believe that dragons used to rule them?
I have no idea they could, because it's in China, and dragons are big there. I don't know. Okay, just let me defend Theros. One more point. If every god is in play at once, they are all creatures. That's one of the most interesting flavor parts of Theros to me. I think the gods are going to leave when we go back to Theros. And that will be the compelling plot, is everyone will be forced to deal with that these gods are not all-powerful, omnipotent beings. And they've all just left society completely.
Because they're chasing...
Where do they go?
I don't know, but they realize that they're more powerful together, and they're going to go do something greater than the people of Theros.
Isn't the point of them, with the fact that Xenagos became a god, they only have power if they're worshipped?
Yeah, sort of.
So how could they possibly just leave Theros?
Because they're working together. They're getting their worship from each other instead of from the people of Theros.
I don't think that's possible.
It is because if they're all in play, they are all creatures. That's my point.
Mechanics to inform... speculative flavor.
That happens a lot. That was why Tarkir was so cool, is the mechanics worked so well with the flavor.
Morph could have worked anywhere.
Not Morph, but the individual, the clan mechanics. Delve Raid.
Wait. Manifest.
No, not Manifest. That was the Ugin flavor.
How about Megamorph?
This informing
how about Megamorph?
How does Delve inform the story?
It works well with what the clan believes as a philosophy. They use the dead to enhance themselves in terms of wealth.
Okay,
they
learn very
more and
abstract.
They gain more power.
That's a completely different style of argument to the gods are creatures when they're all in play argument.
Well,
you're saying that you really love process as an ability, is what you're saying.
I like process. Okay. I don't think it's great for standard, but I like it as a flavor ability. Yeah,
I don't think it's good in any format, so you shouldn't say standard.
Well, sure.
But
good and limited.
It's great and limited. But no, it's worth saying about it. Obviously, it wasn't going to be good in anything else, but it's so disappointing because it doesn't work in standard. Like, Monstrous is never going to be in modern or Legacy.
Monstrous was in standard.
I know, that's my point, is it was awesome in standard, but it was never going to get played anywhere else. So you can make mechanics that are only good in standard, and they just didn't in Battle for Zendikar.
Right.
Except maybe Awaken, which is the disappointing part. I don't know. I'm sick of Battle for Zendikar. I need a new set to come out.
I don't like Battle for Zendikar that much either.
I don't know. That's my defense of Theros.
Battle for Zendikar seems at least moderately entertaining for me compared to all of Theros.
Well, that's because they've been actually writing a story in Battle for Zendikar. They have characters.
The reason that I think that Battle for its story has been interesting is just the fact that it's using the Planeswalkers
as
story points, and the fact that most of the Planeswalker story points aren't Gideon, because the Gideon story points are so horribly awful to read.
They're all pretty awful to read. Let's be honest.
But the Gideon ones are just like, keep scrolling. Hey, look, the end of the story.
I think you just don't identify with Gideon at all.
He's a terrible planeswalker. He had no reason to be defending all of the people on Zendikar at all. And now he just has decided he's going to sacrifice his life for them. When his plane was so messed up and he didn't do much there just because he got scared.
His plane isn't facing existential threat.
So the existential threat, that's what he lives for.
I don't know.
Also, why is Kiora also on this plane?
She's from there.
Are they near each other?
She's from there. She's from Zendikar. She planeswalked to, we don't know, but she ended up on Theros to get the Biden to go back to Zendikar. Yeah,
is that true?
I'm pretty sure it's
a
story.
There are merfolk on Zendikar.
I thought that she was also from Theros.
No, she's from Zendikar. She goes back and finds her sister, and they talk about when she first planeswalked.
Oh.
That's what the promise is.
It's
Kiora's promise to her sister to always come back to Zendikar.
That was probably in the one that I skipped.
Probably. It sucked. It wasn't worth reading. It explained how the gods became kind of jokes to the merfolk.
Coolest thing Kiora has done, though, was Jace tried to read her mind, and she got thrown by an octopus at him and, like, slammed the bident into his neck. And was like, don't ever read my mind, you little fucker, and, like, walked away.
She was gonna kill him, and Gideon saved him.
Jace is an obnoxious little twat.
It was so cool.
It was the first time I ever noticed the giant pearl in her forehead, or the sapphire in her forehead.
You mean the one that they make look like a vagina on every single
Yeah, I've never seen it before.
Oh, okay.
I just never noticed.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like all of Emrakul's brood. For making comparisons. But anyway, are there any more interesting if-wens?
Kaladesh and Vryn are both wens, but those aren't interesting. Those are obvious.
Vryn sounds super cool.
So does Kaladesh.
Kaladesh also sounds super cool.
Everyone responded well to both of those, I think. From the 10 planes we saw, like, I want to go there.
Bushido is a wen?
Renamed.
Bushido's a great ability.
It. Just go back to Kamigawa.
Is Bushido the Inkai's ability?
No, that's ninjutsu.
Okay, what's Bushido?
If this creature would block or become blocked, it gets +X+X,
okay.
Where X is the number after Bushido.
Okay, sure. I'm not opposed to that.
Dark elves?
I think they're talking about World of Warcraft-style dark elves, where they're
purple. No, really?
It could be, like, drow, too.
Yeah.
Both of those things are depictions
of dark
elves.
Are they not talking about the elves that
media.
Nyssa got scared of at the
time? They're talking about one that's Shadowmoor.
Yeah, Shadowmoor elves are actually the good elves, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, you're right. No, in Lorwyn, the Shadowmoor elves are the evil elves, and they're the only ones that, with whatever thing that changed the world, turned good.
Well, they were basically the same,
because
everything else was now significantly more evil than that.
Yeah, that's how it works.
I don't know how
it's all about perspective,
okay,
man.
So that's not the world I know of.
The Lorwyn elves...
Shut up!
So the Lorwyn elves were obsessed with beauty, and so, like, they get really clicky and stuff.
They murdered everything they thought was ugly.
I'd like to ask her.
I want to be there.
And then, when it switched over, there was so little left that was beautiful that they turned to protecting what was beautiful that was left. And so it was like, they're the only people that changed for the better.
I appreciate that.
I like that a lot.
I did too.
Also, I have to point out that legendary spider is a thing. If you follow...
Yes, please! Oh my god!
If you follow Mark Rosewater's blog, you will be surprised at all to find out legendary spider. I'm surprised legendary ooze isn't on here.
Describe what the legendary spider...
I want a planeswalking ooze. That comes first.
What does the legendary spider look like? What does it cost? What does it do?
Putting me on the spot here.
Make something up.
It's green-black.
Okay.
It's green-black blue.
Why blue?
Because then it can be good.
All right. You know, there's a card called Death Rite Shaman.
What were we saying about Death Rite Shaman?
It's the best card ever printed in all Magic. Best creature, is what I meant to say.
Death Rite Shaman is already, like, really good. I don't know if it's the best creature ever printed, but... But imagine if it was also hybrid blue, and it had a blue-activated ability.
I'd be okay with blue, because you could say... It could be some sort of crazy, mind-eating, brain-eating spider. That'd be fun.
Like, instead, just be an octopus.
Yeah, or that.
When it enters the battlefield, you may search your opponent's library, hand, and graveyard for any number of creature cards with flying and exile them.
It's something a spider would do,
what?
I would guess.
That's
yeah.
something that doesn't target much.
That's what I would expect a legendary spider to do.
Because Delver's flying part is on the other side.
That's not universally good. I want this card to be awesome.
And Monastery Mentor is another card. Like, I'm trying to think of cards that you see.
How about it's a... 5/5 vigilance reach for green, blue, black. It has an ability.
It already seems terrible.
It has an ability that makes spiders.
It's already going to be played as tension.
But I thought we were talking about like extended.
It has an ability that makes spiders.
Whenever a creature an opponent controls dies, put a 1/2 spider with reach onto the battlefield.
That feels more like a snake thing.
Spider thing.
Yeah, okay.
Spiders usually eat live things, not dead things.
We're just making up cool cards, I think.
And it's got to have a ridiculous blue ability.
I think it should be a...
Sacrifice 3 spiders, draw 7 cards.
No. You guys don't know... No, it's got to be interesting. It's got to do something... There's a card from Ravnica where it was like... The original Ravnica. It was like some weird thing that when it dealt commentators at a point, you get to look at their hand and like cast something from it.
Okay.
This could work for our brain-eating spiders.
Well, see, this is why I put
tribal?
You on the spot, Kaz.
What?
I think you're going to have the best ideas for this.
Isn't that, like, very similar to Rexxeal?
Rexxeal casts spells from the graveyard.
Yeah, but it's the same flavor. It's like he's a horror and he fucks with your mind and he's able to cast your spells because of it.
Yeah, but I just like Cthulhu, so...
okay, but if we just could make, like, a Rexxeal variant,
We get the opponent to do... When he deals combat damage to the opponent discards their hand. You get that many spiders, you get to cast all their spells for free.
And it's a 0/12 for Sultai.
Yes.
Does it reach?
No. It would have to be a 0/8 because it has 8 eyes and 8 legs.
No, instead it's got flying.
It's got flying good speed.
No. It has the better than flying green ability where it's flying but not. It can only be blocked by creatures with reach or flying.
It can only be blocked by creatures
so
with flying,
it's...
and it has reach, so it can block creatures
yeah.
with flying. But it doesn't have flying.
No,
that would be such...
It's green, it can't.
Ninjas are coming.
All right. Well, if we're seeing a trend here, this is gonna be printed in 5 years.
Ninjas.
2 years. 2 years is what I meant.
Why,
just like the diamond mana.
Don't you just mean 15?
I don't mean 15 years.
He literally everything
what?
From Kamigawa is in this list except for Splice.
God, I
and,
want to think
more
years.
Also, Proliferate is in this list. Snakes. Samurai, ninjas, Bushido.
Oh god, when are we going to Kamigawa, guys?
Oh god.
No, watch, if I scroll down, it's gonna be in the list for if.
I'm surprised that he would even want to go to Kamigawa since. Didn't Magic lose all of its followers when they went to Kamigawa the last time?
Okay, champion. Kamigawa was an overreaction to the power level of Mirrodin, and it was really underwhelming for standard play.
Sounds like Battle for Zendikar.
to a greater degree.
Yeah,
and of
obviously.
Course, the third set of Kamigawa was by far the most underwhelming, which left a bad taste in a lot of players' mouths.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, the commander format became a thing, and there's like 1,000 legendary creatures from Kamigawa block.
Yeah.
So now it's all popular.
You're talking about the fact that Battle for Zendikar has like no cards in standard play?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's just totally underpowered compared to the last two.
Okay. That's what I thought you were talking about. I just wanted to...
Yeah. Compared to Tarkir, at least.
Yeah, compared to Tarkir, it is...
Tarkir was nuts.
Arguably worse.
Well, we'll see. I'm excited for Oath spoilers.
I'm excited for Oath.
I hope they push the... Oh, okay, we'll get there.
Sure.
What?
He wants to talk about diamonds.
Sure. So before we get to diamonds, you were bringing up how you could have changed Death Rite to also have a blue cost in it, right?
Yeah.
That would look terrible, wouldn't it? Like, I can't think of any cards that have triple
There's
pledges.
None.
Ready?
Okay.
Ready? You know what you do instead? You just literally put the Sultai, tooth on it.
Okay, here's what I was thinking about. So all of these decks in Standard right
people.
Now are
just
called,
putting
like,
diamonds on things.
So all of these decks in Standard are called, like, Jeskai Black and Teemer Black and, right, all these stupid names, right?
Yeah.
I think it's terrible. It's a terrible naming convention. But I think it demonstrates that we are heading towards four-color allies, right? Depending on how they work it out, it's going to happen.
You mean as a Standard deck?
Yeah, in some set there will be...
Do you know what it's not going to do?
What?
Happen because we're losing the fetch lands that caused this trend.
I don't think it's going to happen soon, but I think eventually they're going to print four-color allegiances.
But the reason those allegiances exist right now is because the way they printed the lands.
I understand.
Which was they had fetch lands that made splashing four colors free.
So here's what I'm suggesting. I don't care about when it's gonna happen or how it's gonna work. It's just these naming conventions exist. They can exist in eternal formats. They don't because they're not as efficient. But my point is, I would rather have names for just non-colored clans. So like
there are names.
For the non, like, not the non-blue clan has a name. What is it?
It's the non-blue Nephilim. You just use the thing that comes before the word Nephilim in its name.
That's not
a word.
Sure, but we don't use that right now because it isn't allegiances.
Well, a lot of people don't use
treader.
Sultai. A lot of people still use Bug.
Well, I know, but those refer to the same thing, and we understand that's what it refers to. It has a name, is my point.
Well, it's people who know the Nephilim will use them if you listen to them.
There's not a big distinction between four and five color decks. Ultimately, it becomes pretty much moot.
Well, okay. What do you say? Like, look at the Nephilim names. Like, do you call it I'm playing a Dune Brood deck.
Yeah.
I play a Glint Eye deck.
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
Like,
Brood.
Literally, this
that.
Is a naming convention people use for four color decks.
We'll put it this way. My prediction.
I am in your Tiller colors.
My prediction.
Ink Treader, bitch.
My prediction is that they will make a set
Sky Black.
Where they invent a new symbol.
Okay, no,
hey, what?
They're gonna invent a new symbol that just means non-blue colored mana.
No, they're not.
No.
I think they will at some point.
They won't.
All right.
And I'll tell you why. Because this game is confusing enough without introducing another 25 mana symbols.
It would only be five.
Introducing one mana symbol is something.
Would only be five.
Well, if you're going to make four color symbols, why would they not also have two and three color symbols? Like, that's ridiculous.
They do. Usually the card costs those colors. But you can't really do that with four colors. That's where it gets hard.
Sure you could.
Which is why I think this is so... But it's really hard to make that kind of fixing.
So you're saying that instead
That's why they're not going to do it.
Okay,
you're arguing against yourself.
Okay, but if it's one... If a card costs white, blue, black, green, it's really hard to pay all of those. If
so,
it costs...
you just make it generic mana, and you compromise and let them pay blue for it.
I understand it's getting it's really close to generic mana, but I think it will happen.
No, it won't.
All right, it's my prediction.
What?
You're just not right.
Why don't they just make a symbol for Wooburg, then? That's easier. It's only one.
Well,
that
they do. It's generic
mana.
It
is generic mana, pretty much.
Progenitus does not cost two Wooburg.
Right. Well, okay, this is what I'm getting at.
No, he means a symbol that is a cost that you can pay four different colors for.
Right.
So you're talking...
Oh,
what you said would be a symbol
that's
a cost
confusing.
That you could pay all five colors for.
Why would they ever do that?
They won't.
All right.
This means just tinfoil hat crazy.
I am.
Maybe even more than that. Let's be on tinfoil hat.
Did you read this on Reddit?
No. This is an idea I've had because of all these decks that are named Teemer Black and Jeskai Black. It's just bothering me that there is no naming convention for that. And I don't think this Nephilim thing is a reasonable one.
I would like to think that I probably know the most about Magic design since I've done a lot of independent study of it. I feel like I have some authority here.
They
having invented the diamond mechanic.
Well, let's talk about that now.
Not yet. I just need to respond to Goodspeed here. They're going to print a commander set. I think Mark Rosen probably doesn't want to do four color whatever and standard whatever.
Sure.
But it's already a foregone conclusion. They're going to do a commander set with four color commanders and maybe naming convention will come out of that.
Okay. I think that's a reasonable way to do it.
Four color commanders are a win.
Is it on the list?
Yes.
Stupid.
Not stupid, it's awesome.
It's obvious. Of course they're
also,
going
to everybody
do
was
it.
Asking for it, so they're going
to
do it.
Because it's the only thing that's absent. People hate to have a pattern that's broken. They can see the pattern, but they know there's a piece missing.
So is five color next after that?
There's already five color legends. There's a bunch of
there's
them.
There's like two that I can think of.
There's like...
There's three sliver legends that are like five color.
Yeah, okay.
Child of Lamara.
Yeah, Child of Lamara is the first one I can think of. Child of Lamara and Progenitus.
Corona, the false god.
Oh, God.
There's,
I know that card.
The one from Lorwyn.
Maelstrom Archangel's not a legend.
You know, when I was looking into the slivers
Horde of Notions.
Oh, Horde of Notions.
There's the...
not Maelstrom Nexus?
Scarecrow King.
Oh, yeah, the Reaper King.
Reaper King.
That guy's so cool.
Yeah, except he kind of sucks.
Oh my god. Can that be your commander?
Yeah.
Oh, I pay 10 mana.
Other scarecrows get +1/+1. Oh man, what a creep. Whenever another scarecrow can be permanent. How many scarecrows are there?
That's the problem.
Oh, okay, yeah, I figured.
Otherwise, he'd be insane.
They printed one in Innistrad the first time.
Yeah, they did.
I do remember that.
It was a really annoying card.
It gave flying creatures like -1/-0 or something.
Scarecrow. Free for a 1/2. Draw a card. Remove target artifact creature card from your graveyard to play.
What?
I write return is remove.
What? Remove to play.
Four letters.
What?
If you want, you can just...
That could be a new mechanic.
All right, so speaking of three generic mana and its costs, Paul, why don't you explain diamond mana?
So last time we talked about the Oath of the Gatewatch spoilers and their diamond-shaped mana symbols, the ones that we haven't seen before. I made the connection to a tweet I made 2 years ago that they should use colorless as a sixth color in lieu of actually doing a sixth color like purple. Everyone knows about this now, but I did some more digging into this idea to see, you know, in Magic design, it's pretty common for multiple people to come to the same conclusion or to have the same idea. In this case, I believe that did happen. Jonathan Laux had this same idea for the Great Designer Search 2. I thought that was pretty cool. I went and looked at his design. He had basically an elf variant, a 1/1 for one that tapped for colorless, and he put it in a context where tapping for colorless instead of green could be an advantage, and that made it an interesting design for that iteration of the Great Designer Search. So let's get into what I think this actually is. I don't think it's a new color. It's a requirement that means you have to pay colorless. With this change, they're bringing a distinction between colorless mana and generic mana.
Where the confusion comes in is that colorless and generic mana currently is represented by exactly the same symbol. It's the same characters in the same font in the same circle, right?
Yeah.
So what a card says, when like Mindstone costs one and taps for one, those are actually different. They refer to different things, and that's where the confusion comes in.
Mindstone's a great example here.
Yes.
So when it says tap, add one to your mana pool, you're making colorless mana. But when it says pay one, tap it, and sacrifice it to draw a card, that cost is a generic mana. A generic mana is a cost that can be paid by any mana, whereas colorless mana isn't the same thing. Colorless mana is mana you could have in your mana pool. It's not a cost.
Sure, and before Oath of the Gatewatch, that just means it can only be used to pay generic costs.
This new mana symbol, the only thing that it means is that generic mana is now distinct from colorless mana visually on cards. I think they can take this and errata all past cards with it and just say, if something makes colorless mana, it now makes a diamond symbol, like Wastes. If that, like that symbol on Wastes means Wastes can tap to add colorless to your mana pool.
So, for example, when they print Sol Ring in these new four-color commander decks, it'll say, tap, add, diamond, diamond.
Could you think of a worse place to print a Sol Ring? It's like, you can't use it to do anything.
You could if they included in the cost.
You can use it. You can use it every time you try to use your commander after it's been killed once.
Yeah, sure, great.
I think that they're not going to errata this stuff. First off, wouldn't that make the rules manager quit?
Didn't you know they put up a job listing for a new rules manager? I'm totally serious.
All right. That makes sense. It's like, fuck this. It's too much work.
It's not... See, they're not actually errating what the cards do. because this is what cards already do. They're only eroding how it's portrayed on cards.
Well, but by that logic, they don't necessarily have to change.
I think it's just going to confuse everybody.
Okay, so this is where I run into an issue with it. On cards, so you're saying it only matters if something is tapping and generating it, right?
Anything that makes colorless mana
the reason,
is now making diamond.
The reason I think that's confusing to just everyone as a population is a lot of cards have activated mana costs that literally just have a number in a circle on them.
And those are generic costs.
As someone who understands the rules clearly, I think that you get that and you can apply that yourself. But I think to have an entire population of Magic players try to play like that is too much to expect, so I think this mechanic is locked on Zendikar right now.
Let me ask you this. What's more difficult? To have the card, have the symbols remain the same, have the confusion remain the way it is, and just keep the symbols on Zendikar, which I don't think they're going to.
There is no confusion because it doesn't make a difference in Magic right now.
Sure.
There is no time in Magic where that is a distinction that needs to be made right now.
And I don't think they need to change cards like Sol Ring to say add Diamond. I think it's still saying it adds two colorless mana is fine. But it doesn't get rid of the confusion of the difference between colorless and...
I don't think they're ever going to errata them. They may just say that Diamond can be paid by colorless mana.
That's literally what it means.
It has to be paid.
But they will never errata it to say Sol Ring has two diamonds on it.
You're saying it won't say Sol Ring adds diamond to your mana.
When I go to Gatherer, it's not going to show me the text as Sol Ring taps for diamond. It's just going to still say Sol Ring taps for two colorless mana.
I think they will. And we're going to disagree about this. That's fine.
Well, I'll agree with that. So 2v2. All right. Productive.
The reason I am really skeptical about this is because the last time they tried to fuck with mana, they made Phyrexian mana.
They're not making a new kind of mana. They're making a new kind of cost.
I thought you just said they're making a new kind of mana.
No.
Okay, you said they're not making a new kind of... But in making a new kind of cost, it is making a new kind of mana.
It's not, though.
No.
Nothing is different.
It's adding definition to something that was already there that people didn't follow.
No, it's
making something invisible visible.
It's
if you want to think of it that way.
Right. It's making something that it was irrelevant.
It just used to be entirely irrelevant.
Everyone's going to have to learn how to do this for Oath of the Gatewatch.
Right.
So they don't necessarily have any motivation to just forget it when they're done. People are still going to know what it does.
So here's the question. For Oath of the Gatewatch, they won't have to because the Oath of the Gatewatch cards will say it on them. So they don't have to learn this to do this for Oath of the Gatewatch.
We have three examples of Oath of the Gatewatch cards. None of them say it.
No, so the reason this is confusing is that they put this on a set that has basic lands that don't have the directions about what basic lands do on them.
That's because they're full art.
No basic lands have the entire time you've been playing.
They say tap, add a blue to the mana pool.
They really don't. I'm going to go find the cons of Tarkir Island right now.
So, my argument was that they're not making something matter.
I agree.
They're not making something matter that was always there. They're changing the definition of colorless.
No, they're not, though. It's still colorless.
No, they're not. It was already this way. Like, literally, right now, these things are all true. They're just now adding colorless as a cost requirement.
Which is why I don't
think
they
need to
change.
Which has not existed before.
They don't have to change Sol Ring, but they might make it less confusing because the symbols are still identical.
I don't think they'll ever do that to clear it up, is my point.
And I never changed
Barry.
I don't know what that is.
Yes, they did.
No, they didn't.
Go on Gatherer and find Wrath of God. Its original text is bury all creatures, but if you go to Gatherer, the Oracle text is destroy all creatures, they can't be regenerated.
I don't think this is going to be retro-applied, because there are so many cards.
Okay, the reason they're going to apply this retroactively is because they're going to continue to use this mechanic in the future.
Did Mara put that on an F1?
No.
This is what it comes down to, is this mechanic going to die with Zendikar?
I think so.
And it might. I don't think it will.
It won't, because it's no reason that it's tied to Zendikar. Every set has some number of colorless things.
Sure.
There are sets that don't involve Eldrazi that are heavily focused on colorless things.
I feel like we wouldn't get a new basic land type if it wasn't going to continue to be a thing.
No, okay. No. So bring this up, because I have an argument for this, and I'm curious about what you're saying. What, aside from Eldrazi, which the theme of the Eldrazi is to remove color, like the colorless mana, to eat the mana and have it go away, what other thing does that you would require colorless for?
If they had this
Do not say
technology...
Artifact, because that's generic.
if they had this technology on the original Mirrodin block, Affinity wouldn't have been broken, because they would still have had, they would have been able to add colorless requirements that you couldn't negate, for instance.
But that defeats the point of artifacts, which are artifacts are a thing that you can pay any color for.
And they're going to want to be able to print more powerful artifacts, and they can do that by making the mana requirements tougher to meet. That's how they make cards like Nicol Bolas so powerful.
I just don't agree with that, because that implies...
Cruel Ultimatum.
The reason I don't agree with that is because that implies that, since they're introducing this with Eldrazi, that implies that artifacts should be able to take control of the Eldrazi, or function on the same aspect of them.
Card mechanics and flavor don't necessarily have to interact like this. There's like a trillion examples where flavor and mechanics wouldn't overlap.
I guess that's true, because Ugin can supposedly control the Eldrazi using force magic, because it says that he's the only planeswalker that's been able to do damage to them, because he can use force colorless mana. So I guess that's a feasible idea.
Let's look at it this way. Instead of going artifacts, they can just start introducing things that are colorless.
That's my point. I would be less surprised to see them introduce things that are colorless and continue with that than for them to retroactively go back and say artifacts are now colorless cost requiring.
No, they won't do that.
They're not going to change
that's
the cost of cards that have been printed.
So you're saying this is going to be like the new Phyrexian thing? The Phyrexians are going to become the Eldrazi?
I don't understand where you're going with that.
Like they completed themselves
all we're
further?
Saying, Ed, here's all we're saying. Whenever a card says tap add gray mana, it is not going to say tap add that many diamonds. That is the only change.
So they're not changing. You have Mind Stone, it makes one colorless mana. It's now going to make one colorless mana, but it's going to be represented by this symbol instead of the number one in a circle. And that is no functional change to what it does. This just means one colorless mana. Or this cost can be paid by one colorless mana.
I don't have a problem with the rules that you're stating at me. I have a problem with the flavor that you're retroactively applying. You're retroactively applying a flavor to things that I don't think existed, because it's saying that artifacts, which you could pay any color for, now only produce this special non-colored mana that Ugin had to specially learn.
This isn't special. It's just what colorless mana is. We just have a symbol to represent it.
The Eldrazi are just requiring colorless mana. I think it's easier to think about it that way. Everything in Magic remains the same. The new Kozilek just uses colorless mana to his advantage.
Okay.
Instead of any kind of color.
So the reason I'm confused by this is just the ending of the most recent chapter.
Sure.
And I don't know if this week's is out yet, because I don't know when they come out. But
tomorrow.
At the end of the last chapter, we have Obnixilis saying rise to something on the plane.
Sure.
And I think it's generally the idea that he's telling Kozilek to wake up.
Okay.
Obnixilis, though he has learned Lithomancy, it has implied nowhere that he learned this special type of mana.
Him saying rise doesn't imply he's controlling anything.
He is controlling it with the magic, because he says he feels the being waking up and moving.
Let's go back to the argument about Lithomancy. Nowhere does it say he can use white mana, and Lithomancy is undoubtedly white magic. Black cannot manipulate artifacts. It has literally no abilities to do that.
I agree. So you're saying that he's going to now become the Black Diamond?
No, I'm saying he has no connection to Kozilek whatsoever.
Is that his next card?
I'm saying that his mechanics do not inform my position on this.
I think from a flavor perspective, he doesn't have to have any connection to Kozilek. He just can know the plane well enough to know he's waking up. When he says rise, it's coincidental because Kozilek's getting up on his own.
It's not.
All right.
He's the magic.
I mean...
He's the magic to restore his own sparks.
I don't understand.
You could argue that restoring his own spark had the side effect of awakening Kozilek, because Kozilek was trapped by the...
And then he was just in a story that's written for fanfiction, was being theatrical and saying rise.
When was Kozilek retrapped in Hedrons?
I don't know.
We have
because
no idea.
He escaped.
We know he manifested, but we
which
don't know to the extent to which
I'm
that
speculating.
Happens.
It's widely expected that it's Kozilek just because of the card that leaked. We don't actually know until the next story what the thing he woke up was. It could literally be anything else.
Let's pretend Kozilek was only partially escaped before, and what Obnixilis just did by stealing the power from the Hedron Network let Kozilek escape fully.
That had nothing to do with Kozilek. The Hedron Network had absolutely nothing to do with Kozilek. It was arranged by the Merfolk and the people at Gateswatch specifically
but
to keep an
stick with me on this. Nyssa did get a bunch of them out of the ground. They were Hedrons that were already in place that they were reusing for this purpose. And Obnixilis came and broke them.
Obnixilis came and just... He didn't break them. He came and he took
their magical power.
Okay.
The power from
them. It's the same thing.
I think taking something's magical energy is breaking them.
What?
I don't like the retroactive flavor this has with what you're saying. I don't mind what it does mechanically. This absolutely is entirely flavorful.
You have to pin flavor to everything about
it. No, it's entirely mechanical. It doesn't change anything about what these cards do.
The card
or how you envision them.
Look, it's just because it works like you're viewing it in a mechanical plane. The card has artwork, and the artwork is telling us that these are the wastes that Eldrazi have devastated.
Sure.
And that's where they're getting the mana from. That's
right.
Flavor.
Right. They can then get colorless mana from the wastes.
They're saying that mana still exists inside of this land that we believe was desolate. I always assumed as a player that it was just making generic mana because it was an artifact. Not that it was making it from a land that had been ravaged by Eldrazi.
It's not. It's still doing exactly what it was doing.
It's making colorless mana.
But it was always colorless mana.
But this implies that Eldrazi, like, that something on Zendikar could live in the
wastes. Can we think about it this way?
Because there's still mana there that's untouched.
Okay, I have a way to solve this. Things that are manufactured by beings make colorless mana. Wastes are manufactured by the Eldrazi. Most artifacts are manufactured by a person.
That ruins. No. So that retroactive application to artifacts ruins what Eldrazi have done to this plane.
Why?
Because all that means that Eldrazi have done is convert the mana of this plane to colorless. That is not what they've done. They've eaten the life energy. They haven't just taken away the color. Because if that was true, certain things could still live in these areas, and they don't.
Right, the Eldrazi.
I don't like that. I might be totally wrong. I don't like the way you're saying this flavor is different. Just based on what I've read, you're implying that the lands the Eldrazi have touched are just going to make the mana that something else has already always been making, and I don't think that that fits with the story that they've been trying to portray the Eldrazi as.
Alright, I have a different argument to approach this from now. The artwork is undoubtedly Eldrazi themed on wastes, on the card wastes. The name wastes is as generic as they can possibly make it. You could have wastes in any setting in Magic.
I'm going to disagree there because they've used the word waste to mean black things before, which is why I don't like the name.
They also used it on Wasteland, which taps for colorless.
I understand that.
They could have maybe called it ruins, but that implies structures. Wastes implies almost nothing except that this used to be greater than it was in some way.
What this implies to me, though, since I know if what you're saying is true, because I always believed, after reading these stories, that there was something special about the force magic mana that the Eldrazi used. What you're telling me, based on this mechanic, implies that the magic that Ugin used is the same magic artifacts are capable of producing, so Eldrazi should have absolutely no power over planes that are functionally controlled by artifacts.
If we let the card Ghostfire inform us about Ugin's magic, which is the first card that ever mentioned Ugin, Ugin uses red mana to produce Eldrazi-like devoid effects.
My point is, if the Eldrazi, the big ones, the ones that are indestructible, the ones that are scary, would end up on the old Mirrodin, they would effectively not be able to do anything because artifacts in 10 small 1/1s could eject Kozilek from the plane. The old Kozilek, the 10/10. The new one would take 12 1/1s. Because their effective artifact mana that they control, if that's what this is the power that they are weak to. And that doesn't make flavorful sense.
So you don't like that Eldrazi are making the same type of mana as artifacts?
Right.
How do you feel about Eldrazi Scions making the same type of mana as Mind Stone? They both make a colorless mana right now. This symbol completely not on the table. How do you feel about that?
That's fine.
Why does putting this symbol on both of those cards make that wrong?
It's hard to explain. The colorless mana cost that is implied on these things when you're sacrificing, etc., from the point of a player as a planeswalker, is something I'm able to extract from a life force. Okay? So by sacrificing, it's not the Scions that are sacrificing themselves, it's me, as the player, that's killing these Scions. I am taking their life force and using it. The distinction that this was colorless versus generic was not something I thought of as a planeswalker, it was just mana I could use. And now this distinction makes me learn something about the Eldrazi that I don't think they implied.
Right now, artifacts and Eldrazi both have the ability to make colorless mana.
Correct.
In Oath of the Gaethwatch, Eldrazi and not artifacts are going to require colorless mana to be paid to cast them and activate their abilities.
How shocking would it be to you if this was just a new diamond mana?
Not that shocking.
Okay, that's all I'm saying, because I really think this is just something separate.
You can block Emrakul with 15 flying squirrels, and Emrakul will die, and that doesn't make any flavorful sense. It's like, you can't have the mechanics in the flavor match up. It just, they don't.
I think they have been working on making flavor match what they've been writing about. That's why they've spent so much time on writing this story.
Oh god! Oh Oh, God. Okay, so, Ed, it happened.
What?
There's a spoiler.
Is there?
Yes!
What is it? Show me.
Paul, so go to the subreddit.
Sorry,
it's called
Mythic Spoiler.
Something Eternal Pilgrim. It costs white black, as far as we can tell. It is a 2/3 with Death Touch that has one generic. Sacrifice another creature, you gain life equal to its toughness. And one white black. Sacrifice a creature, another creature. Exile target non-land permanent. Activate this ability only if you have at least 10 life more than your starting life total. This is also a pre-release promo, because there is a date printed on it.
Okay, this card has absolutely...
Pre-release promos are every card now.
Every rare.
This card has absolutely nothing to do with the mechanic we're talking about.
Nope.
No, but it is really funny that these have all happened
during
podcasts.
We're going to start recording
these
daily. Until January, whenever the set comes out.
Okay, so we're going to disagree about whether diamond mana is going to exist outside the context of Eldrazi, which is fine. For the sake of the rest of my argument, I need you to accept the premise that it could.
I agree that it could. I don't think they will, in the same way that you think they will.
Okay, so I think the natural place to apply this concept after you apply it to the Eldrazi is to apply it to new Phyrexia.
Ugh! This is where I didn't want to go. I completely disagree with you, which is fine. Keep going.
Before the Phyrexians took over Mirrodin, Mirrodin was populated... The world is a giant artifact planet. Lots of the creatures are artifact creatures, not all of them. The Phyrexians have never been affiliated with artifacts to any more degree than, like, Urza was. They were just opposing factions that both used them to do powerful things. But they didn't have any artifact connection, per se. When they took over Mirrodin, I think that, like, based on the five factions and the things they do to become completed, they are going to gain an affiliation with artifact. Like, for instance, if you look at the white faction, the Machine Orthodoxy, they complete people by replacing their skin with a ceramic metal, as it's described in the Planeswalker's Guide to New Phyrexia. That's what all these white plates are. They're literally pieces of metal that look like porcelain.
I thought they literally tear people apart and put them back together again.
There's that too. All the factions do this in different ways and to varying degrees.
So the flavor that you're referencing on, and I will agree with you this on this one. This is one that I agree with you on, is that the Phyrexians, when they died entirely, the only way they got to this plane was through an artifact. And it was through essentially what we've known in the flavor of the game being a germ token, which we know cannot exist without an artifact. They are 0/0s, they go away unless they're getting a buff.
The living weapon mechanic.
With the living weapon mechanic. So the idea is the entire plane, now that the Phyrexians have assimilated everyone, all of the Phyrexians cannot live without artifacts, but they don't have to because they already do.
So I think the Phyrexians in Magic are now just artifact aligned. Like, they're inseparable from that artifact nature.
Yeah.
In the same way that you don't see a Dalek outside of its cage.
I've seen a few Daleks outside their cage.
I think this is the perfect setup to introduce cards that cost both diamonds and colored mana. Because you're going to have a card like, say, a Blade Splicer in New Phyrexia. You could imagine a similar card, like a card that cost one white colorless. It costs a generic, a white mana, and a colorless mana. And so the mana symbol would be, or the mana cost would literally read one sun diamond.
And I don't agree, because the correct place to place it is in the set that you made it, which is with a character that already controls the mana, which is Obnixilus, shown to do so with Lithomancy.
I don't think they're going to introduce a combination of colorless and colored costs in the first set that has colorless costs. I think they're going to do this in baby steps.
I don't think that they would do it on Phyrexia.
I agree with you, Paul. It's probably going to happen. That makes the most sense, but I still understand the flavor disconnect there.
Down the line somewhere, they can reuse this, even if they don't do it in every one. And I think that's the perfect setting for it that already exists.
The reason I don't like that is because I want, based on what they've been writing about and based on how secretive they've been with the Eldrazi, I want the Eldrazi just to have a thing of their own.
If that were the case, Ulamog would have had this diamond symbol, the new Ulamog.
Like, I don't understand why they didn't do this in the first set, and I think everybody would probably agree with that.
One of the ideas behind going from three sets per block to two was so they always had something exciting to put in the sets that come after the first one.
Kozilek could also be somehow different to require essentially artifact mana.
Which was why I think that it's possibly being controlled by Obnixilus.
Well, and that doesn't change how we think it works.
It does.
That would just fit better flavorfully.
Right.
I don't think Husk's being controlled.
No, I don't think he's being controlled, but I think that if he's, like, woken up by an artifact keystone, like a stone keystone and it's lithomancied, that makes a little more sense.
That would explain this new symbol over his head.
Kozilek's followers have always had those symbols over them. Like, Kozilek's brood always has those floating prisms around them. Well, like, even back in the original. Just the original Kozilek card doesn't portray
them. The symbol for Oath of the Gatewatch, this set, is Kozilek's thing.
Yeah.
It's two guys high-fiving.
Or it's two guys high-fiving. But it is Kozilek's mane.
Can't argue with that.
Crown?
Crown. I call it a crown.
Crown sounds good.
I call it his face.
Halo? I don't know. It's an adornment. I don't know what to think about this symbol until I see it, because I think Wizards does enough that I don't expect that I can't assume anything about the mechanics they make. And so many people have just run with this mechanic and put it where they want it to, makes me really skeptical that that's what it does. Morrow has not said anything about how this mechanic works. It's just been players who are trying to make sense of it.
Oh, that's true. You're not wrong. And that means that our conversation is also going to speculation. But if we're saying opposed things, one of us will be right.
Which is why I think or that my opinion here both needs be to be in this podcast, which is why I made the statement so strong.
Yeah, sure. Warranted, for sure. Alright, well, I got my Mirrodin idea out there. I don't think we need to go any deeper on this right now. We can wait for some, official words.
I will say one thing real quick. Morrow has talked about how he's talked about the original Mirrodin, and how the last set fit on, like, artifacts getting a bonus for, like, getting more colored things, and so he always wanted artifacts to be, like, almost, like, holding color, which is kind of how they're always supposed to have been viewed. I'm not entirely sure that what you're saying with New Phyrexia, like, having an artifact have totally colorless mana.
And that's what I was
sense.
Saying with artifacts. I don't understand having them cost colorless mana, because artifacts are supposed to be castable by any color, because they are made of generic mana. They are not
right.
made of solely colorless.
I'm just saying this
solely
right.
colorless idea is Eldrazi.
This is something that Morrow has stated before, and I mean, he could obviously, clearly, he does whatever the hell he wants, but...
I mean, you could also make the argument that they are the way they are because we didn't have this idea before. You couldn't do this because it didn't exist.
If it is that, I don't like it.
Well, okay, but it doesn't mean it's restricted to artifacts. It is just colorless matters. I think it will always make sense when they apply it. Makes sense on Kozilek for the Eldrazi. I think it will make sense where we go next. Doesn't mean it has to be Eldrazi specific.
It didn't have to be artifacts, but that's like the other context where being affiliated with colorless could matter.
Sure. And so, okay, so I guess what we're trying to say is that it will make sense when they use it the way they do, if it works the way we think it does.
So I think this card is good. Maybe it's just me, the Eternal Pilgrim.
It's in standard with Felidar Sovereign.
I was going to play Felidar Sovereign.
Play it with Feed the Clan.
Also, this does sound like make a commander deck around this.
Let's make
your commander deck.
Let's start with standard. Let's make Abzan life gain.
Yeah.
Yeah, sacrifice your Siege Rhino.
Siege Rhino is definitely in this deck.
What am I sacrificing for these abilities?
I don't know if you have to. You're not sacrificing anything until you're exiling stuff.
You can sacrifice it when they get killed.
30 life.
You can sacrifice in response to it dying.
Well, it can't sacrifice itself.
No, like the creature. If someone's got a removal spell,
sacrifice it
in your life.
Yeah, but that means you're just going to kill this first.
That's a good thing.
Then they have to kill this.
Honestly. I'd rather this die than my Siege Rhino.
But the same
but
thing
also,
happens.
It's also a free sack for a single colorless, which is always good.
A single colorless? Generic.
A single generic, man? I'm sorry, guys.
A single generic.
Like, Aristocrats wasn't that powerful of a card, and yet it got played.
That's
like,
why that
because
is
it has a single
specifically,
colorless sacrifice in
specifically
creature.
That distinction that we just made is why I don't like that mechanic.
No, you literally,
the language used around this is just going to shift because it exists.
Sure, that's the alternative.
That's the truth.
So what? Apparently this card, Aile the Eternal Pilgrim, is some from Uncharted Realms, and she sacrifices creatures because she worships Ulavog, so she sacrifices creatures to Ulavog.
Oh, Moshi Roy.
Interesting, it doesn't cost diamond then.
Shut up! Oh my god, we're done! The dump!
It is interesting that it doesn't cost diamond, isn't it?
It's worth noting.
That explains why the card's not an ally.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, I'm just reading this off of Mythic Spoilers. Some guy is talking about it. I'm assuming he knows what he's talking about.
I suppose a white black. I suppose a white black core cleric wouldn't be able to use diamond mana.
That's me.
Yeah, it's going to cause white and black, and you have to have a waste just like to activate its ability? Yeah, right. That's bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a really harsh requirement.
I'm looking forward to playing with that card.
Do we want to move on from Magic?
Do we have anything to talk about?
Well, I already stated my...
da 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 da